Behold. Today is Wednesday, April 28th, 2021. The time is 9:19 a.m. and I now call this meeting of the Dallas City Council to order. We're going to begin with our invocation, followed by our pledges of allegiance. Chair recognizes Mayor Pro Tem Medrano to introduce the person providing our invocation for today. Mr. Medrano, you recognize. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor. Today we have Mr. Lyon, the Biblical Director of Men of Nehemiah. Mr. Lyon is the Biblical Director at Dallas-based Men of Nehemiah. The Christian organization helps rebuild the lives of men and families that have been torn apart by the vicious onslaught of poverty, homelessness, substance abuse, crime, and violence. As a serial entrepreneur, he served as founder of multiple companies. As a best-selling author, he writes about apologetics and culture and spiritual issues in relation to faith in God. Executive producer and director of the Lyon Collective, he led a team who developed marketing strategy and content for online projects, video productions, and media for a wide variety of clients across the U.S. He's been a guest lecturer at Texas Women's University and presented at 1 Million Cups of Coffee. He's taught kickboxing for 15 years at various Dallas gyms and Southern Methodist University. He leads multiple community groups and has been on humanitarian aid trips to Haiti, Africa, India, Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Cuba. Mr. Lyon.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me here with you today. I'm going to start with an excerpt from Oswald Chambers' classic devotional called Utmost for His Highest. He was a 20th century Scottish theologian, if you're not familiar. And he says, "Once our concentration is on God, all the limits of our life are free and under the control and mastery of God alone. There is no longer any responsibility on you for the work. The only responsibility you have is to stay in constant touch with God and to see that you allow nothing to hinder your cooperation with Him. The freedom that comes after sanctification is the freedom of a child, and the things that used to hold your life down are gone. But be careful to remember that you have been freed for only one thing, to be absolutely devoted to your co-worker, the Lord. We have no right to decide where we should be placed or to have preconceived ideas as to what God is preparing us to do. God engineers everything, and wherever He places us, our one supreme goal should be to pour out our lives in wholehearted devotion to Him in that particular work." Please join me in prayer. Father, thank you for being present in today's council session. Thank you for giving us the privilege of another day to serve you. I pray you help the council with their agenda today and for the remainder of the year. I pray you speak through each member, providing wisdom for their action items and flexibility where needed. Help the council and city employees listen well, whether with individuals or groups. Help them be bold where needed, but always from a position of genuine humility and transparency. Thank you for providing daily mercy and grace. Thank you for being in charge of the chessboard. We're grateful you are the ultimate mover of the pieces. Bless this day in unexpected ways. I pray in Christ's name. Amen.
We'll now have our pledges of allegiance. So, you're present. Please rise.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
You may be seated. Good morning, Madam Secretary. Let's move on to our open microphone speakers, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good morning. This morning, you have six individuals who have signed up to speak. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council will be removed from the session. Individuals will be given 3 minutes to speak. When your time is up, please stop. It will be announced. Also, if you have any comments, address those to Mayor Johnson only. Your first speaker, Carisha Daniels.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you all for having me this morning. It's such a pleasure. I'm going to be talking about civil rights this morning, and my expected outcome from this particular meeting is police reform. So a Dallas citizen's life has been turned upside down by the hands of Dallas PD, Northwest Subdivision. On October the 24th of 2020, two Dallas PD officers made several attempts to enter the citizen's door. After several attempts, arresting officer 11422 and 11608 decided to open her door to her home without a warrant or permission. The young lady was found bare, naked, with a gun pointed at her body. Citizen was so afraid and shocked by the actions of PD that she pushed one of the officers, number 11422. Arresting officer 11422 reached out and pushed her back. Then he pulled out his yellow taser and tased her with him pulling the trigger. Citizen was tased outside of her breezeway in her back area. Citizen was then slammed face down on the ground. Arresting officer 11422 placed her under arrest without her rights being read. DFD and Capel FD arrived on the scene. Citizen was involuntarily admitted to ER at Medical City of Los Colitas in Irving, Texas. On October the 27th, Citizen was too trusting. She allowed two individual males inside of her home. She was immediately handcuffed, drugged, and sexually assaulted. Shortly after the incident occurred, Dallas PD, DFD, and Capel, Texas FD was dispatched to her location. Citizen was found naked and drugged. Citizen was placed under arrest by arresting officer 1177 without her rights being read once again. Citizen was involuntarily admitted to ER by Baylor Scott and White of Grapevine, Texas. Citizen was still sedated upon arrival. She was left in a coma in ER at Baylor Scott and White without any paperwork from Dallas PD. Citizen's family and herself has made several different requests for ATOP paperwork from the Dallas PD and have yet to receive the requested documents. On November the 1st of 2020, Citizen called PD because she was experiencing paranoia from the previous events. Dallas PD officer 11422 placed Citizen under arrest once again without her rights being read. Citizen was taken involuntarily to ER at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas. Then she was transported to Glen Oaks in Greenville, Texas. Citizen has been hospitalized 7 times since October the 24th of 2020. Citizen's team has all police records, body footage, pictures, and some audio. Her team, family, and friends are seeking immediate answers and demand justice. Thank you all for your help in resolving this serious issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Mallory York. Yes, we can
hear you. Okay. My reason for coming today, you guys know I usually talk about the family, but we got other problems going on here now. The changing the name of the street to Botham Jean, they didn't inform me. I've been here coming up on 6 years. I think today makes 6 years. Getting ready to go into my 7th year. You know, it's hard for small businesses. Most businesses don't last 6 months. And I'm pretty sure in the minorities probably don't last 3 months. You know, but I've been over here all these years. You guys changed his name to Botham. Botham was over here maybe a year before this happened. So when all this about he lived over here, he did stay over here for a little while, but he wasn't here that long, you know, because of the tragedy that happened to him. And that was, like I said before, that's very sad. But I've taken petitions. I've started a petition to change his name back, and I got quite a few signatures there. And these are people that live over here and actually live in this community and work and own businesses over here like myself. When I see his name up on there, it reminds me of a song by Billie Holiday. I'm pretty sure you guys know what that is. When I see this, and then another thing that I noticed is that they only put it in the South. They took our historical district, which was South Lamar. Most people call this area South Lamar. We started looking for our business here. Go to South Lamar. That's where we at. My business, I named it because a shaving bar on Lamar. You see how that ran? You know, we put that together. I put that together like that. It took me time to do that. But you guys sit up here and didn't inform me, didn't give me no letter, gave other people letters, didn't send me no letter. And I think I've established myself pretty good in this community, in the Cedars community. But y'all left this dark cloud over us, and nobody's gotten back to me. And then when you go down Bobbin Boulevard, take a drive down there. I bet you can't. Try to walk down there. I bet none of y'all been down there. 15 of y'all picked this spot. None of y'all probably work over here. No, I mean, probably Adam, you know, because this is his district. But I know he's done. I already voted. So you guys need to. And then why didn't, if I had to take it, why didn't y'all send it back the other way? That's another thing that you guys did. Send it to what's that? Victory Park. They didn't get none downtown. They didn't get it. Only the South got it. And that wasn't fair. You guys should do better than that. You need to remove my brother's name down from there. You know, and if you want, you can't, if you look down, you guys should have went down there and cleaned up down there instead of putting some signs up. All the dirt that's on the side of the roads, that's what y'all should have been doing. I'm asking for an extension on another minute because there's a lot of stuff on here that has happened here. You guys need to change this name back or, you know, I'm prepared to file an injunction to get this name changed back because his name should never been put up there in the first place. Once y'all put up a memorial for him somewhere, I asked for an extension.
Your next speaker, Jeff Veazey.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Veazey, and I live in the old Lake Highlands area of northeast Dallas. I have lived on the east side of White Rock Lake for most of my life. For me and my wife, a soon-to-be retired DISD teacher, and our three adult sons, no other place could ever be called home. Part of our retirement plan to keep living in our house in Old Lake Highlands is the modest income we earn from Airbnb while renting our quiet little bungalow. It is attached to our house, and we are always there when it is rented. We have never had any complaints. Several neighbors have used our Airbnb so that visiting family could stay nearby rather than have to stay in a hotel across town. I'm a member of the Dallas Short-Term Rental Alliance Leadership Group, made up of owners of short-term rental property and associated service businesses. Dallas STRA has not collected dues and has only started to formally organize. Yet the Alliance has helped register more hosts with the city with a goal of 100% and has helped remove nuisance properties, party houses, from the platforms like Airbnb and VRBO. 100% registration of STRs and 100% hot tax collection can occur as soon as the city aligns with the best practices of dozens of other cities and allows the platforms to collect the hot tax at the point of sale, like any other business. Party houses appear to be less than 1% of Dallas STRs, but they are a serious intrusion on the rights of the neighbors and must be stopped, like our street racers, with tough enforcement. That 1% also means that there are also a lot of good people in the thousands involved in being ambassadors for the city and local business. Just as we should not ban all cars or closed streets because of a few street racers, we should not ban any STRs other than the offending party houses. The party house problem is not just an Airbnb or VRBO issue. Facing bans on those platforms, party house operators are moving to new platforms. A new party house two blocks from my house was listed on Realtor.com. You need to make it too expensive upfront for them to operate in Dallas.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Here we are. You have a few seconds left.
While also discouraging tax collection from visitors. That seems backwards to me. We need a fair, efficient
Your time is up.
Of ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Sandra Crenshaw canceled. Dolores Phillips.
This is Dolores Phillips. I did send you handouts and emails. I sent you an email, one of four on last night. I sent the other three this morning. Asked them to be file stamped with the city secretary's office for public record. In 2009, and you do have the video, in 2009, you have the video and the audio. 2009, it was audio from 911 calls. There was an internal investigation by EPD Internal Affairs. The lady is named Kimberly came back and said it was a problem. Internal Affairs at DPD concluded it was not a problem. There was calls made that was said never made. In 2011, 911 operator Lee Polk found the calls that they said was never made. 2013, Mayor Rollins prearranged a meeting where premeditated Green Oaks took place. Mary Lou Belize Thorne, police officer, went to retrieve my court documents, was supposed to bring them right back to me. She never made it back. They took me to Green Oaks. That meeting, 2 hours plus, was at 1400 Botham John on the first floor in the lobby. This is headquarters. The fabricated police report states I used hands and feet as weapons. There was no altercation. I was never disorderly. I never had to be restrained. It was Corporal Cotner who was unusually angry. Now, understand that at the same time I was coming before the city council members, the mayor, saying that you premeditated false imprisonment. You were, had done the same thing to Robert Groden, and I now find that Robert Groden was on agendas when I was on the speaker's list to speak. Robert Groden, you was having executive sessions to resolve the issue of making him your target in your subject. In 2006, Robert Groden filed a personal injury against the city of Dallas et al. And prevailed. 2010, Robert Groden filed another complaint in federal court against City of Dallas, Vincent Goldbeck, and Frank Gorka. He prevailed, but while 2010, when he was in federal court, he went to back to Dallas County in 2014 and filed a complaint against Dallas County Historical Museum et al., and he prevailed again because Dallas battled this man for 20 years. Plus, and they was battling me at the same time. In 2006, I filed an EEOC complaint against the incorporation who's well protected. I've been taking them blows ever since, and I'm going to take them blows in humility. I don't fight with police, and I do not do open.
Your time is up. Thank you. Carvel Bullens.
Yes, hello, this is Carvel. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, thank you so much for allowing me to speak here to the mayor and the council today. Wanted to speak really quickly to the ARPA, American Rescue Plan Act funds that are coming in. The first wave, I believe, to be put before the council to accept, I believe, around May 10th or something like that. But, of course, this was birthed out of the $1.9 trillion package that President Biden put into place. And I just wanted to point out for the mayor and the council here today that the stimulus checks that were sent out of that package totaled, I think, about $424 billion, as presented in City Manager Broadnax's presentation last week in the briefing meeting. And so that comes out to about 22% of the package amount. So I pointed that out to say that Dallas should consider taking the example of the president, the new administration that we have that actually is supplying these monies to the city, to actually consider doing immediate cash assistance, better programming than just some of the basic status quo programs that are in place right now for the residents, to get some immediate relief for people, which is part of the tier one on the plan, immediate relief for Dallas residents right now out of that first wave of money. I don't want to go into numbers. You pay the city manager pretty well to do the numbers for you. I'm hoping that the council is actually looking over these plans and taking considerations before just taking, information from the city manager. But I wanted to speak real quickly about the other federal programs as well. Do not use the excuse of the other federal programs like FEMA and things like that to alleviate yourself of responsibility to the Dallas residents. We're more than willing to meet with council members. I want to thank City Manager Broadnecks right now for meeting with us last week. Had a great meeting that discussed that, him and his staff as well. Reached out to some of the council members as well. Was hoping to meet with a few more of you than we did, but, you know, had a couple of good meetings there. Was kind of disappointed that we didn't get a lot of response. But we have to make sure that, referring back to page 24 in the city manager's presentation, the financial flexibility is needed by the people as well than just the city and its budget. I think that the city oftentimes gets monies in and they forget that they have a responsibility directly to the people, and they feel like if we just had the departments that we already put money into, i.e., you know, the police department, I mean, we're up to, what, $600 billion for them? I mean, $600 million, excuse me. I'm using billion because it's getting pretty close to a billion.
Your time is up.
But thank you for your time.
Thank you. This concludes your open microphone speakers for this meeting.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Let's move on to our voting agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Agenda item one, approval of minutes of the April 14, 2021 City Council meeting.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Next item.
I'll now move to your consent agenda. Your consent agenda consisted of items 2 through 43. Item 10 was corrected. Item 18 is being pulled by Councilmember Mendelson and Deputy Mayor Pro Tem McGeary. Agenda item 19 is being pulled by Councilmember Mendelson. And agenda item 39 is being pulled by Councilmember Mendelson. Agenda item 26 was deleted. Therefore, your consent agenda consists of items 2 through 17, 20 through 25, 27 through 38, and 40 through 43.
Your motion for approval.
Approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The ayes have it. Consent agenda is adopted. Next item.
Agenda item 18 is a resolution 1 declaring approximately 37,925,000 square feet of improved land unwanted and unneeded, located near the intersection of Forest Lane and Greenville Avenue, and authorizing its advertisement for sale by public auction. 2, authorizing a purchase and sale agreement to be prepared for the auction surplus property receiving the highest qualified bid that is sold absolute. And 3, waiving the minimum reserve amount. This item was pulled by Councilmember Mendelson and Deputy Mayor Pro Tem McGue.
Approval.
Mr. Mayor, I move to approve the resolution with the following change. The reimbursement proceeds shall be deposited in General Fund, Fund 001, Department DEV, Unit 1183, Object 5011, and any remaining proceeds shall be allocated to costs associated with the construction or operation of the new Forest Green Library located at 9619 Greenville Avenue.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Discussion, Mr. McGue?
Discussion at this time.
Anyone? Sorry, who was that? Madam Secretary, did you hear?
Mendelson.
Ms. Mendelson, you're right after 5 minutes.
Thank you. So I know that I've asked this question, and so it appears that there is an appraisal done on the property for $1.1 million. Is that correct? Can y'all verify the amount?
Mendelson, this is Chris Wecker, Director of Sustainable Development and Construction. That is correct. We had an appraisal done on the property, and it came in at $1.1 million.
So can you share with us why there's no minimum being required for this auction item?
When we take properties to auction, it's actually atypical to have a reserve put on that property. It's more establishing the market value through the auction process is the way we typically do things. It's in conformance with state law in terms of selling property owned by the city for market price.
But sometimes we do put one there, is that correct?
That's correct.
And who decides whether we should or we should not? How is that decision?
It depends on the situation. The two that come to mind recently that we've done with a reserve, one was the surplus library property, which they had recently purchased prior to the city deciding to sell that and renovate the existing Royal Library. That was at the Forest and Tollway area. And since the city had recently purchased that property, it was decided to put a reserve on that property. One of the items that was on the agenda here earlier today, number 17, the park board decided to put a reserve on that property, which was park property, that is also going through the auction process as a result of the action taken by the council earlier this morning.
So who decided whether or not to have a reserve on this property?
Again, it's standard process to not have a reserve. Someone would have had to make the decision to have a reserve. It was, you know, we consulted with the library, who is our client on this project for the sale of the property, and both us and the library agreed that a reserve was not needed in this situation.
So do you think it's appropriate that library staff is deciding whether or not to have a reserve on a property? I mean, are they qualified to make that decision?
It wasn't just the library staff making that decision. It was our typical process is to not have a reserve on a property that's going to auction. So jointly, we discussed with them. They didn't see the need, and we don't see the need because it's not part of our normal process.
Okay. Well, I would like to consider whether it should be part of our normal process, and I'd actually like to ask the city attorney to draft a resolution so that we do establish a minimum reserve amount for when we take properties to auction, and I'd like to put that on our next GPFM agenda for discussion, and any council members that would like to join us, you're certainly welcome to. It seems that it's not particularly fiscally prudent to not have one. The second thing is, Elizabeth, can you tell us what happens to proceeds in terms of when they're deposited into our account? What fund does that usually go to?
Yeah, thank you for the question. The funds go into our capital account, and we use those in the budget for building services to fund major maintenance at city facilities.
And are we currently funding building maintenance at a level that's providing good repair for our assets?
No, I would say that our assets are not at a state of good repair currently, and we do need to invest more, as we've done in the last several years, increasing our investment each year in facilities maintenance, yes.
And so I think the motion that was just made moves that money into building out the library, but we've already got bond funds for that, correct? That was in the 2017 bond, is that right?
It was in the 2017 bond. My understanding is that these are items that are beyond what was in that bond. I don't have more detail on that. I need to ask the bond office to comment.
So if something is going to go over expenses from what the original amount was, is it usually that we would dedicate funding this way, or we would come back and do it through another fund?
Well, very often in a bond program, some projects come in under budget and some, depending on timing, might be a little bit over budget because we tend to budget as if the projects are happening at the midpoint of the bond program, and therefore as a project is done later, it often costs more because of escalations in construction costs. And so it's not unusual for a project to come in either under or over. The issue in this case is that the library proposition is actually fairly small. And so there isn't a lot of give in that budget if something were to come in over. And so I suspect that's what's happened in this case, and there may be either some overruns or maybe some additions or additional items that were added to the project. I'm not sure. I really need the bond office to comment on that piece of it.
Would the bond office like to comment on that, please?
Good morning, Councilmember Mendelson. This is Adriana Castaneda, Director of Bond and Construction Management. And Elizabeth is correct in the information that she just relayed. The proposition for the libraries is very small. It was approximately $15.5 million, and we have two of the libraries still under construction, which includes the Forest Green Branch Library and the sixth floor renovation. So, yes, if a project comes under budget, we usually utilize or supplement those funds to finish the other projects that are left at the end, which, yes, construction costs can escalate.
So how are you doing with your 15.5 proposition right now? What's your forecast?
We have completed one of the libraries, Big Creek Park Library, and we expect to complete Forest Green within the next month or so.
And how are you doing financially with it?
We have seen some cost escalation, and some of the reasons is because of COVID, some of the pricing has been going up. So we have been using some of the older bond funds as supplement funding.
So would you be able to complete both libraries with the $15.5 million?
That is the goal, council member.
So are these funds needed to complete the project? It sounds like you're saying you can complete it without these additional funds from the sale of this property.
Since we're still under construction, Councilmember Mendelson, we do have a budget, but there's unforeseen during construction. So we definitely like to keep some contingency within our projects just to ensure that we can complete the projects.
So I'm sorry, I'm not really understanding. Are you saying you think you can continue to complete your project with the dollars that are allocated from this bond and maybe past bonds? Or are you saying you actually need this money to complete those two projects?
What I'm saying is that we definitely need contingency within the project to ensure that the project is completed. Once completed, whatever funds are not utilized, then they can be allocated for other projects.
Okay. Well, I guess my point is that I feel like we're doing this backwards. The money is traditionally sent to maintain buildings and maintain infrastructure, not to add to bond, which would then go into a fund that could go to other bond projects. We pass over $1 billion in bonds, and this is literally meant to maintain our infrastructure, our assets, and I'm not going to be able to support dedicating that funding to that. I can support selling the property even without a reserve this time, but I do think we need to consider that as a policy. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak on or against Mr. Magoo's motion on item 18?
Yes, ma'am.
Who'd you hear?
Gates.
Ms. Gates. Blackman. You're ready for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mayor. I had some of the same questions that Ms. Mendelson has pointed out, but first I want to start by saying thanks to real estate for addressing some of the surplus property. I mean, I saw the parkland that was on the agenda and the consent, and this property. I know we've been trying to get the Preston Royal Library, the previous site, sold so we can actually, instead of rebuilding the Preston Royal Library, we can remodel it. So I know that's something Mr. Kleinman's been talking about for a long time, is we have the surplus land and let's try to get it disposed of. But I do have a concern that we can't build, because I know Mr. Magoo and I thought we were going to be able to build the two libraries and do the addition to the sixth floor when we put the bond program together for the library. So could I have some details? How short are we? And at this point in the budget, like, why are you needing to use this land, which wasn't originally budgeted for that purpose, for the library, the Forest Green Library? It sounded like you think you might need it, you might not. What did you budget to actually build the library, and how much do you have available, and how short do you think you're going to be? Somebody?
Good morning, Honorable Mayor and Council Members. Manager Del Gaffrey, Assistant City Manager. I believe we budgeted $6.8 million for that specific library. The bottom line is that you have very limited projects in there. You have four specific projects that we have to stay on top of to ensure that we execute. In other propositions, if you have 20, 30 projects, we have some leverage, and some projects come in under budget, some projects come in over budget, and throughout the year we can adjust accordingly with that one. With this, there's only three projects, and one of them is not completed, which is the Forest Green. We're actually right now talking a change order with a contractor, and we don't know where that would lead us. And that's one of the reasons. And then on the sixth floor furnishings, there's also some unknowns that we're trying to work out as well. So when you have unknowns, the contingency and any additional funds that become available are sometimes needed just as a safety net for that one. Once those projects are completed, that fund is going to be released, and the city council can do whatever they wish with that specific funding availability for that specific proposition. So I hope I answered that.
No, you didn't. How much? So it was $6.8 million that we estimated. What is it looking like now? What are the estimates that you have to build it? How much over are we?
Adriana, do you have the number for that, specific number for that?
I can get that information, Councilmember Gates, and email it to you.
Okay, and then how about on the sixth floor?
I will do the same thing for the sixth floor, Councilmember.
Okay, and so if, and you know, we promised the community that these are the bond programs we're going to do and we're going to implement. And I commend you for finding a potential extra place source of funds. But again, that those source of funds are supposed to be used in to be able to maintain maintenance. So, but I think we need to be able to complete these projects. So I'm going to support that. But could you tell me if we make this motion today and those funds are not needed, because you haven't even proved to me today that they need them. You think you might, so we want to put them there. But if they're not, would they go back to the maintenance fund, the capital fund?
I can take that question. The funds need to be deposited into the capital fund regardless. Within that fund, earmark them for certain things at a facility. However, they would remain in that fund. And so, yes, if the council wanted to proceed in this direction, they could set a limit and not to exceed for any additional costs or some other mechanism to ensure that anything over that or anything that's not used then goes to regular maintenance of city facilities.
Okay. Well, Mr. Magoo, could we add that just anything over remains for general maintenance of facilities? Would that be an amendment I could make to the motion?
Ms. Gates, thank you for the question. I guess my position in this is that this is coming directly from the old Forest Green Library, and it's going directly to the needs we already know we have in the construction of the new Forest Green Library. Just as you were stating, you know, as we promised through the bond package to deliver to the community, this is the most direct connection I can come up with of going straight from library to library. There's no doubt the need will be greater than the resources already. But that's where I am on this.
Okay. Well, I understand that, except for the fact that we allocated new funds for the library, and this pocket of money wasn't supposed to be utilized originally. So I understand the dilemma we're in now, and I want to finish the project. But it sounds like it might be a moot point, because if it's not going to be, but I'd still like to be included to support this. And then lastly, I want one more question. So regarding the reserves that we mentioned, and I know there's been examples we've used them and examples we haven't. Do we have any? I know the DISD has a state obligation that they can't sell surplus land for a percentage reduction of what they currently pay for it. But are we under any obligation that we can't sell land for less than we paid for it originally? I've been told that DISD has that because they have some surplus land in my district that they haven't been able to sell. But.
Councilmember, this is Chris Weckert, Director of Sustainable Development and Construction. What's required by state law is that we sell it for a market value, and an absolute auction is a qualified determinant as to market value.
Okay, so we don't. It's not at all tied to the price we pay for it. Okay. All right. Correct. Thank you. I just want to make sure that was. I hadn't heard that before, but I want to make sure that was clear. All right. Thank you.
Ms. Blackman, 5 minutes.
Thanks. Okay, so I do have a question. Is this was the sale? First of all, can you read the whole amendment again? Because just a point of information, just to have some clarity of what it is that we're voting on. Because I also want to seek to separate some of these to seek the sale versus where the money goes. Billy Ray, can you read it again? Or Mr. Magoo, can you read the amendment?
Let's see. Okay.
Or the motion, I guess, is what it is.
I move to approve the resolution with the following change. Amend the last section of Section 7 to read, the reimbursement proceeds shall be deposited in General Fund, Fund 001, Department DEV, Unit 1183, Object 5011, and any remaining proceeds shall be allocated to costs associated with construction and operation of the new Forest Green Library located at 9619 Greenville Avenue.
Okay. So, it's already second. Okay, so back to the question. Okay, from the bond office. Is, again, what Ms. Mendelson and Gates asked, is the money there to pay for this new library?
This is TC. Good morning, everybody. And so it appears that, as council's asking the questions, there's not a lot of clarity in the responses that we're giving. And so my understanding, and staff has got to correct me if I'm wrong, is that the question was answered, meaning the project's not finished. There's built-in contingency in the project. Should the project go over budget, we typically, and we talk through all the way we handle projects, you know, at the end or in the beginning, we typically will find resources to ensure that we can pay the contractors. My understanding, unless someone corrects me, is that there is an expectation that the budget will be tight on the existing library, but we have every expectation that we might be able to meet the current budget. The request, as I understand it, is to allocate these funds that would typically go to maintenance directly back into the project. Not sure whether or not they're needed, but the issue becomes it may be, and I'm not sure, and Councilmember Magoo would have to clarify, for additional things over and above the existing scope. I'm not quite sure. That question was not answered, and I think it was asked. And so I'm just concerned twofold about the practice of allocating resources and putting them back into specific places where they either are needed or may enhance projects versus what the current policy is, and that is to support maintenance for the facilities to ensure that they don't continue to degrade over time. And so, again, the simple answer, and staff's got to correct me, is I believe the existing project is funded, and there may be some existing contingency within. This is additional resources to either do new things or different things and or as a precaution. So, again, staff, please weigh in. We need to probably try to find a way to answer the questions more directly going forward because we spent a lot of time and you're asking good questions, but I think there's simple answers to them, and we need to provide those. Thank you.
That's correct, Mr. Brodnix.
So is staff asking for this extra funding in preparation for a possible overrun, or is this something that's come out of a community discussion, Mr. Magoo, or is it, and again, is this to give, and if we do pass it, does all this money have to be spent at this library and we can never put any reserves back into the general? Anyone?
Another question for Mr. Magoo or for city staff?
I can try to answer, Councilmember Blackman.
And you're on my time, so Mr. Good, if you could be really quick.
Yeah, so the reimbursement proceeds all go into the general fund development for as what we've talked about based on this amendment. I've been told numerous times recently that we're coming in over budget and we're having issues with our contractors, and this is, yeah, you know, there's a ton of things on this list to do the library that we weren't able to get to because we didn't have enough money to begin with. But this is really just making sure we get this project done and delivered at the level that we promised to the community. That's it.
And so staff is, I mean, what is your projected overruns that you think could come in at this? And is this, I mean, and do you have an estimate?
Good morning, Councilmember Blackman. This is the Anna's Director of Bonding Construction. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm working on getting the council members an update on the cost estimate and to determine whether there will be any cost overruns at this point.
And Adriana, are you recommending that all these funds go into this line item based on this sale?
I'll jump in, ma'am, and we won't be recommending all of that. There was one item that we're working with a contractor on, and that's the security component for the library. We're probably looking at a $200,000 maximum overrun if there is a need to do that, but that's why we're still working with a contractor to resolve the issue.
So if there's a, and this could go, I think the appraisal was over $1 million and this is a fifth of it. What happens to that other 800,000 if we basically earmark it for this project? We can't, then we have to come back to council and change it and move it back in. Is that correct?
My understanding is that the deposit would be made into the General Capital Reserve Fund. And we would just use it for this purpose. It would almost be an earmark. But since it's in the fund, you would not need to make an additional appropriation or move it or change that. It would be where it needs to be put into facilities maintenance.
But, okay, so then it would it go to any facilities or only to this library?
It would go to any facility. I mean, that fund is what we use to put into the major maintenance fund for building services to maintain the, I don't even know how many hundred buildings the city owns.
Okay. And Tammy, is there, can this resolution, because there's three items, can it be split up?
Good morning. Mr. Mayor, may I ask a clarifying question? Are you asking if the motion was to approve with an amendment to Section 7 that allocates the cost associated specifically to this library? So if you're asking the approval of the item can be separated from that allocation of the cost, yes. Because they can both. So if you don't was made, the item about the allocation would be taken up first.
Because I don't have a lot of confidence. And then I could also ask to delay it to get some. I guess that's back to Chris. If there's a delay on this, what does that do to everything? Only because I just don't think there's not enough clarity around, in my opinion, about what is the next action and how it's going to be handled.
Councilman Blackman, this is Chris Zweckard. So we tentatively have the auction scheduled with the auction firm for May 26th. If council was to hold this, we would need to relook at scheduling that. I will note that the plan was to move the item 17, which was just approved earlier this morning, and 18, both of those auctions at the same time to maximize the number of bidders, the number of participants, and the excitement around these properties coming to bid.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
What else would you speak on for or against Mr. McGee's motion on item 18?
Yes.
Mr. Gates for a second round, 3 minutes, Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Ms. Blackman, for your questions. And so it sounds like we can separate. I think it's prudent at this point. Let's move forward on selling the property. This would be, and I could, if someone could help me with the motion afterwards.
But then it'd be until we know exactly why staff is asking how much over, and if it's only a small amount, then I think, you know, we could then allocate that amount and then make sure the rest of the funds are used how they're originally budgeted. I do, before I go down that path, I do have a question, though. Why operation? Typically, we don't, I mean, wouldn't operation be budgeted in the general fund going forward to operate this library? I mean, there was, that was part of the motion. It'd be concerning to me to use one-time funds in operating it at all.
Thank you for the question. Yes, we would budget for staff or ongoing operations expenses in the library department budget of the general fund. We would not use these capital reserve funds for operations. Now, we might use them for example, HVAC or something that might be considered necessary to operate the building, so the regular maintenance then supports the operation of the building. Perhaps that's how it was intended. I don't know.
Is anybody, I'm assuming, Mr. Algalfrey, it was your department that came up with the motion, why that operating was included?
No, ma'am. I'm going to defer to Joey Zapata for that question, if you don't mind.
This is Joey Zapata, Assistant City Manager. Councilwoman, would you repeat the question just to be sure I heard you right?
Well, when the motion was read, it said that the surplus would be used, I mean, the funds would be used for the overruns related to the construction and also operating.
So my understanding is that staff put forward the item as it's written in the agenda. The amendment was presented by the councilman, so I'm not familiar with how we would use this with operating. I'll agree with Elizabeth Rach, our CFO, that we typically would budget for operating expenses through general fund, and these would be capital dollars used just for capital purposes. So I believe I'd defer the question to the councilman and the notion of using it for operating, but our practice is to use capital.
Yeah, I think it can only come for capital or the one time in building costs from this. If there's some tied to operations, it's what would need in the development or building of the library,
right? Okay.
That would lead to operations.
Okay, so it's not ongoing. I don't want to use one-time funds to, you know, start up the library and then we might not be able to maintain the operations of it. So that didn't make sense to me. So, but I would like to separate and move forward on the sale of the property, and then the distribution of those funds, the allocation of those funds. I think it's fair that we get all the information that we've been promised related to where they think the project is at this time and what the overruns are going to be.
Gates, sorry,
yes.
We're pausing your time in a minute right now. It's a minute and 1 second. Thank you.
Yeah, I just need to know how to make that motion.
Last one, I want to ask you a question really quick to make sure I understand. Yeah. Then I'm going to try to translate it to the parliamentarian so we can get it right. Is what you want to do separating?
I think we have to start by separating.
Or, I'm asking this. Is it a substitute motion that only includes the sale?
Okay.
Does that make sense? Do you want to see if you can offer a substitute motion that would just do what you want to see happen today, which would be the sale, which would then subsume the old motion. It would just be a motion to approve the sale with none of the other stuff, and the other stuff wouldn't be in it anymore.
But I think it's fair if there's a need for the overrun. I want this project to happen, so I just need to know what the information is and why they think that these funds are needed. So I'd like to separate, and then my preference would be to make a motion to hold the second part of it, so it would come back to council after we get the information from the bond office.
Okay, so Ms. Palmino, you heard what Ms. Gates wants to do. I was just trying to work through that to help you get some clarity. What needs to happen now?
Well, Mr. Manager,
she makes her motion to separate according to how you think she should word it. We'll get a second and proceed. But what does her motion need to say so she can say it?
a motion to divide the question, and when that is done, she will say that she wants to divide out the allocation of the cost associated with the construction from the rest of the items in the resolution, and then that taken up first before the rest of the motion, which is to approve the rest of the item.
Okay, Ms. Gates, you're up. Did you hear that? You get to make that motion now.
Okay, so I'm going to move to separate the resolution related to the sale of the project, or sale of the land, and from the construction and allocation of the funds.
Okay.
Moved and seconded. Is that just a straightforward down vote now, Ms. Palomino, or is there a debate about that?
It is a straight up or down vote, no debate.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay.
Nay.
Nay. Nay.
Too close. We have to have a record vote. Okay. That takes us to have a record vote.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. When I call your name, please say yes if you're in favor, no if you're opposed. Mayor Johnson?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Medrano? Mayor Pro Tem Medrano? I'll come back. Deputy Mayor Pro Tem McGew?
No.
Councilmember West?
Yes.
Councilmember Thomas? I'm sorry, Councilmember Thomas?
No.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Resendez?
Yes.
Councilmember Narvaez? No. Councilmember Basildua?
Yes.
Councilmember Atkins? Councilmember Atkins? I'll come back. Councilmember Blackman?
Yes.
Councilmember Kleinman?
Oh. No.
Councilmember Mendelson? Councilmember Mendelson?
Yes.
Thank you. Councilmember Gates?
Yes.
Councilmember Blewett?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Medrano?
No.
Councilmember Atkins? It's absent when vote taken. With 9 voting in favor, 5 opposed, 1 absent when vote taken, the motion passes, Mr. Mayor.
Secretary, so Ms. Palomino, I need you back, just so everybody can keep up. So we are now on which portion of the motion, so everyone knows what part we're debating now.
The allocation of the cost associated with construction of the new Forest Green Library located at 9619 Greenville Avenue. That would be separated out. Portion.
So, members, sorry, before you go on, Ms. Gates, I'll just make sure everybody understands. So, this isn't a new motion or anything. We've just now separated the original one into pieces, and what Ms. Palomino just said is the piece that we're now debating. So, anyone wants to speak on for or against this portion? Ms. Gates?
A point of clarification. Why are we voting on this portion first and not the sale of the property? Because you couldn't have this portion happen if you didn't sell the property.
The parliamentarian can explain, because I don't know the answer to that.
We've taken the smaller division question before you're approving the sale. So if you approve the sale, then it's going to go back to the original.
Okay. On this item, I'd like to defer. I'm going to make a motion to defer the item until we have the information back to the budgeted. Well, we got the budgeted information on the Forest Green Library, but what the current projections look like for construction.
Second.
Okay. Ms. Parliamentarian?
What information, Mr. Chair? Mr. Mayor?
If you just give me one.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I think you're about to ask the question
right
I was going to ask.
I'll get right to you. So, Ms. Palmi, I just want to make sure I'm doing this correctly. So, is the motion to defer take precedence over further debate on the piece of the original motion that we're discussing? Meaning, do we take up this motion to defer immediately? I would think we would because it disposes of it, but I just want to confirm that. If it were to be passed, it would dispose of that piece.
It is a higher ranking motion than the main motion, and so yes, you would take this up.
Is it debatable? Motion to defer,
yes.
I assume it is.
Yes.
All right, so we're now, members, we're now on the motion to defer. Ms. Gates has moved to defer that smaller piece of Mr. Magoo's original motion that we were debating. So we're on the motion to defer. Anyone wish to speak on or against the motion to defer?
Mr. Mayor.
Let me go back to your point of information, Mr. Narvaez. Thank you for reminding me.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The question is there a date certain on this? It didn't sound like there was, so I just wanted to see if there was a date certain.
Ms. Gates, can you speak to that?
I'm okay with it being the next agenda item. I think they give us the information, so they said they would email it to us, so yes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
What is the, I'm not sure when the next agenda is.
Well, while we're looking into that, we'll go into anybody who has any points for or against or on the motion to defer. Ms. Gates, were you?
Yes.
Finished?
I just want to say why I made this motion.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, you need to go first.
Thank you. All right. The reason why I made it was because I think we need to have this information. I am in complete support of this project. I will allocate all the funds that are necessary to get this done. But it's troublesome to me that we're making fiscal decisions without complete information. And I just think it's prudent that we figure out why we're having to do this. It's concerning to me. I understand it was a small proposition, but we need to be able to manage it. Construction costs are going up. I understand that. This is great that we might have another source of funds. But I think in all transparency, we need to have an understanding of why these funds are needed, because we're taking them away from another needed use as well. So I want this library to open. I don't think waiting for the information is too much to ask for at this point, and getting these projects completed. So, and I think it gives us an idea that we're going to know where we need to negotiate. If we just say, oh, you have an extra $1 million, I think we would be less likely, staff would be less likely to try to negotiate these contracts down and get the best bang for the dollar. So that's why I've made this portion. Sorry, I think it's this discussion's gone on very long, but I just think it's important for fiscal responsibility that we get all the information before we make this part of the decision. Thank you.
Mr. Kleinman, 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Question for staff. Does the separated section of the motion actually appropriate or dispose of any funds? In other words, do we write a check because of this part of the motion?
I don't think, I mean, this is Elizabeth. I'm not sure if there's a legal answer, but from a financial standpoint, regardless of what happens in terms of designating the purpose for the funds, they're going to be deposited into the General Capital Reserve. So that happens. Then they are appropriated separately, and I don't believe the resolution includes an appropriation.
Do those appropriations typically, would these appropriations require council action?
Oh, every appropriation requires council action.
So every item that potentially is listed in this separated section of the motion would still come back to council for a decision before we actually wrote the check.
Yes, but however, some funds from this account have been appropriated in the current budget to building services for capital projects. So to the extent that the council's direction was to make these the priority, we would then be delaying other maintenance of city facilities elsewhere, because there is already an appropriation to spend money from this source, and it's possible that we might wait to further appropriate until the budget next year and just instead defer other capital projects in order to do these.
So I guess kind of what I'm asking is, it's today's action does not actually appropriate the money. That would come back to council for further action so that we would have the transparency that I think some of my colleagues are concerned about, where and what this money would be used for. We'd be asked on an individual basis before spending the money. Is that correct?
It is in part. However, we've already made an appropriation from this fund, and the balance in the fund at the end of last fiscal year was not as much as the council appropriated. We were assuming revenue into this fund this year when we made the appropriation. So it really depends on how many properties we sell this year and how much those sales come in for to determine whether we meet our budgeted revenue number. And, you know, so there is a little bit of give and take there in terms of is this money assumed to have already been appropriated? And I would say we did appropriate more than we had in the fund at the end of last fiscal year. We need some revenue. At this point, I believe we are projecting to make quite a few sales this year. However, we ordinarily would be appropriating those revenues already. They would have been appropriated already.
Councilman Kleinman, let me make sure I'm clear. I think, was your question related to the fund itself and appropriations or the need to come back related specifically to the project? And if the project had expenditures that exceeded and or needed additional funds to utilize these funds, I think you were more talking about, do we need to come back? And if we have a project overrun, would we have to come to council? And so the bond office, one, would need to answer that question. But my theory and understanding of it is if the project plus the contingency that budget gets outstripped, then, in fact, we would have to come and ask for some additional resources, and we would use the funds that Elizabeth talked about to do that. If, in fact, we are within budget on the existing scope, things that council has already previously authorized, then we would not need to come back, and there may be some dollar amount threshold that allows us to not have to come back should it not exceed a certain amount of resources. But again, Magid or Adriana can answer that question.
Sufficient. I think that's a sufficient answer, and that was my concern. I know there's some concern that kind of that we're using these funds, and we want to make sure we know what we're using them for. And since we, especially on this project, we have to come back to council, I think that sufficiently answers my question. Thank you. That's all, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else wish to speak on or against the motion to defer? Ms. Mendelson, you're recognized for 5 minutes on the motion to defer.
Thank you. I just want to confirm that I heard what I thought I heard. TC, I've heard you say that this bond proposition is on schedule to build the libraries without additional funding. And then I heard Magid say, I agree. Is that correct?
That is correct, ma'am, with the exception that we're dealing with one item specifically for the Forest Green branch library, and that's, again, that relates to the security, and so that's the only uncertain item. But TC is correct, we would come back if we need additional funds, we would come back and get council's authorization to issue the change order and the additional funding.
And then, Elizabeth, am I correct that I heard you say that when you budgeted for building maintenance, you included items like this revenue expected to come in, and that means we would not have fully funded this account to do the maintenance on our buildings if the proceeds of the sale don't go to that account? Is that true?
That is true. I will say that current estimates of the revenue from the various sales that the city has in process exceed the amount we budgeted. That happens every year. We hold it, and then we appropriate it in the next year for building maintenance. So we are expecting this year, if all the sales go through at the amounts we think they will, to exceed the amount that we budgeted of new revenue. We would have held that and budgeted it appropriated it next year.
And so did you budget for $1.1 million to go into the account based on this sale?
We budgeted for $3.2 million of new revenue to go into building services for building maintenance around the city.
For all sales?
Yes.
And how much of that did you think was going to come from this property?
I would like to ask building service, I'm sorry, Chris Sweckard in sustainable development to speak to that level of detail.
You
routinely work with the budget office, updating them on how the sales are going, how they're proceeding, so they can update the amount in there. At the beginning of each year, we just look at a projection on terms of the expected dollar amount that we'll have coming in from various sales, some of which we know about, some of which we don't know about throughout that year, but we provide regular updates. As Ms. Rach indicated, we are currently ahead of schedule for this current year.
Well, my concern is that we've got buildings that have problems with air conditioning. We've got roofs that need to be repaired.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor.
State your point of order.
Germaneness to the deferral.
Could you please keep it a little more tailored to the motion to defer, not the underlying issue? I was kind of concerned about that for the past couple of remarks, but appreciate the point of order. I'm going to sustain it and say keep it a little closer to the actual motion to defer, not the underlying issue. Thanks.
That. So I'm fine with deferring it. But I think that this question is important for us as a council to make really responsible decisions about how we budget in the first place and then how we allocate our dollars so that they are being used as expected, and especially when we have our most senior staff telling us that they're going to be able to meet the budget from the bond as expected. I agree I want this library built, and I want it to be beautiful, and I want it to be everything that it was intended to be. But to just say that the dollars are an open checkbook is not responsible to me. So thank you.
Anyone else wish to speak on for or against the motion to defer? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No, no,
no.
No.
Do a record vote, just be certain, Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. I'll call your name, please state yes if you're in favor, no if you're opposed. Mayor Johnson?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Medrano?
No.
Deputy Mayor Pro Tem McGew?
No.
Councilmember West?
Yes.
Councilmember Thomas? Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Resendez?
Yes.
Councilmember Narvaez?
No.
Councilmember Basil Dua?
Yes.
Councilmember Atkins?
Yes.
Councilmember Blackman?
Yes.
Councilmember Kleinman?
No.
Councilmember Mendelson? Councilmember Mendelson?
Yes.
Councilmember Gates?
Yes.
Councilmember Blewett?
No.
With 9 voting in favor, 6 opposed, the motion passes, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. So that means the portion of the divided motion that was taken up first has been deferred in accordance with Ms. Gates' motion. We're now reverting, Ms. Palmeo, correct me if I get it wrong, we're going to revert now to the remaining portion of Mr. McGew's original motion and continue the debate on that portion. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, wonderful. Anyone else wishing to speak on for or against the remaining portion of Mr. McGew's motion on item 18? Hearing none. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to simply ask you to restate that. If you could just have that restated.
Sure. That's a good idea, actually. Go ahead. Miss, I'm going to ask the parliamentarian if she can tell us what's left. So if Mr. McGew can be on standby in case he needs to assist. But Ms. Palmi, are you able to help us out with that? Tell us what part is remaining.
Mr. Mayor, it's approval of the item of the resolution, items 1 through 10, which is declaring the improvements unwanted and unneeded, located at the intersection of Forest Lane and Greenville, authorizing its advertisement of public auction, authorizing the purchase and sale to be qualified, to be prepared for the auction surplus, property receiving the highest qualified bid at, that is sold absolute, and waiving the minimum reserve. And it keeps the fund that was read in by Councilmember Magoo intact in the Section 7. My apologies for the poor reading.
No problem. It's a little complicated. Does that work for you, Mr. Magoo? Is that correct? Is that an accurate reflection of what's remaining? Okay, we'll assume by his silence that that is consent.
Sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
I just wanted to confirm that you are okay with what was read by the parliamentarian, that that's an accurate reflection of what remains of your motion that we're going to resume the debate on.
I'm going to have to trust and assume it is.
Me too. All right, so anyone else wish to speak on for or against what's left of Mr. McGee's motion, item 18? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The ayes appear to have it, Madam Secretary. Next item.
Agenda item 19. The resolution authorizing, one, the adoption of the City of Dallas Strategic Mobility Plan, SMP, known as Connect Dallas, and two, the coordination of initiatives and partnerships necessary to implement the actions and goals set forth in the SMP. This item was pulled by Councilmember Mendelson.
Approval.
Second.
Moved and second. Any discussion? Mr. McGee? Is that who it was? Who made the motion?
Discussion at this time.
Okay. Anyone else wish to speak on for against item 19?
Mendelson.
Ms. Mendelson. Sorry. Ms. Mendelson, and then who else?
Thomas.
Mr. Thomas. Ms. Mendelson, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Well, I pulled this item just because we have been briefed on it and gave very substantial input, I think, and I wanted to commend the department and specifically to Interim Director Gus Kulkarni for really listening to the input of the council and updating the plan so it was inclusive of maintenance and good repair of our mobility assets like our streets and our sidewalks and our traffic signals. And I just think that staff did a really good job of briefing us and making sure we understood the whole plan and really listening to the input that they got. So this was just a big kudos. Thank you.
5 minutes?
Yes. First, I want to commend our former transportation director on his work on this. I also want to commend our current interim and hopefully soon to be permanent transportation director, Gus. He's doing a phenomenal job in this capacity. Of course, Magic as the assistant city manager. And then our city manager, staff couldn't do what they do if they didn't have the support of our city manager. This is long time coming. I would say long overdue. It's long time coming. The fact that DART is having listening sessions on the grid system, changes made to the grid system, is only going to enhance the work that's been done. Taking into consideration the transportation equity study that was done, contracted by UT Arlington, that helped to put this into some perspective from an equitable standpoint. The fact that we're looking at now mobility as opposed to transportation, meaning any aspect that would get you from point A to point B. I think this is a historical day. We don't need to not recognize the importance of this being a historic move for us, this council, approving a comprehensive mobility plan. I think that it was a great idea to develop a community advisory council that was appointed by members of the council, representatives from the neighborhood with members appointed by council members to get the community's input, south, north, east, and west. And so as we embark upon this vote, I hope it's a unanimous vote. I can't wait to be able to share it with not just my constituents, but those residents all over the city of Dallas, that the council came together, put our due diligence into this, and we'll be able to say that this is a plan that the city of Dallas is behind 100%. Just like any plan, there's going to be some changes that need to be made. However, we have the framework for a plan that's going to transform how individuals who don't have access to transportation, as well as those who do have access to transportation, are able to move across this city, not just those who are here now, but the millions who will come in the future. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else wish to speak on for or against item 19?
Councilman Atkins.
West.
Mr. Atkins and Mr. West. Mr. Atkins, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, thank you, Chairman Thomas, for that great accolades to the staff. I guess, can I talk to Magic, Gus? And my question to you is that we just now having a housing policy, and we're working on the economic development policy, and we do not have a transportation policy as of today. How is this resolution going to fit into the housing and the economic development policy?
Good morning, Honorable Mayor and Council members. Councilman, actually, the Strategic Mobility Plan, or Connect Dallas, it's got several elements in it, and a couple of those elements relate to economic development and housing. So it's going to go hand in hand with the economic development policy. So once the City Council approves this, that's actually going to be integrated into the economic development policy, and as well as to the larger vision of the City Council. And so that is very connected to it, and the Strategic Mobility Plan will serve as a guidance and policy to the things that we want to do with economic development and housing as well.
Well, I'm trying to make sure that what we vote on today, this resolution, that we do have a housing policy, but I also want to make sure that we are working on the economic development policy, and we also got a transportation policy that we are working on. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to make sure that these strategy plan would not be in a silo. I'm trying to make sure they got to be connected together. And we got to make sure that the biggest concern is that we got numerous of jobs. We have opportunity to get our resident to those locations, especially in the port. The strategy, you know, going north and south with DART, we got to go east and west. We got to make sure that we are getting people, the citizen, to those jobs going east and west, not just north and south. And that's something that we are working with DART. I guess, Magic, how is DART is fitting into this plan?
DART will be fitting into this plan in terms of their future plans are going to integrate with ours. The city has to take the leadership role and work with DART as a leader, not wait on DART to get us the plans that they're working on, but engage with them on their future plans to do that. You mentioned also the housing and economic development policy. Part of the scoring matrix for some of the projects that we have will relate directly to opportunities for housing and economic development. So if you have housing and economic development opportunities, that will score higher for our transportation and mobility projects in there. And that would include also things such as transit-oriented development and working with DART on specific routes that the city would desire to have.
And I know in Section 3, they're referring to a 5-year capital program and future transportation investment. How is that going to be funded?
That's going to be done through several mechanisms. We've We were just awarded, the City of Dallas was just awarded about $80 million in the MCIP funding, the seventh call for the county funding. COG, we always apply for grants, federal grants, and as well as local grants, and the Council of Government has been a great supporter and a partner to us in some of those projects. And of course, future bond programs that would allow us to do this. It's going to come from different sources, and we're going to be able to try to utilize all the sources that are available for us. If there is also the stimulus that could come in from the feds, that's also another opportunity to kind of expedite some of those goals and objectives.
Okay. Is Dr. Johnson there, please?
Councilman Atkins, I'm here.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Johnson. I know you're here with MAGIC relating to economic development policy that we got coming up, and we know we just passed a housing policy, and we got a transportation policy, and this strategy that I feel like they all got to be connected. There is money coming down the road for the transportation policy. So I know that coming up in a few short weeks, in less than 30 days, we are going to be talking about the economic development policy. I just want to give your thought with this resolution. How do they gonna connect, and how do you expect your department with housing economic development policy connect this transportation strategy, since we do not have a transportation policy?
Yes, good question, Councilmember Atkins. The way MAGIC was describing the connections is absolutely correct. So when you start to look at the policy, first of all, let me say this. We have a bunch of policies out there, a bunch of strategies. The document is basically designed to align these different pieces. So when you see action items, you'll see policy, action, lead. The lead talks about the alignment of the various departments and outside stakeholders working together around alignment related to issues of transportation, housing, funding, the whole nine yards. So it's actually built into the policy, and actually we have reference points in the policy that speaks to supporting policies. For example, you'll see supporting policy, transportation mobility plan. You'll see supporting policy, comprehensive housing plan. So, but I think the beauty of the work, really, Councilor Atkins, is the focus on alignment, something that will actually help us get to where we're going. So that's basically how it's going to work.
I guess the city manager, TC, my question to you as the city manager and as run out of department, and right now we do have money coming from the federal government and transportation, and we're trying to make sure we have the inequities we talk about. What do you feel like that this gonna you be able to balance the inequities of the southern part of Dallas with this strategy? Do you see the equities is in this resolution?
Thanks for the question, Council Member Atkins. And so, similar to what Dr. Johnson as well as MAGIC have talked about, the impetus and or the foundation and guidance in the beginning of the development of this strategic mobility plan, equity as well as accountability were key components of it, as well as the integration with our housing, future economic development plan, and any other plans that we have to ensure, again, that they all speak and harmonize at the end of the day and or have the flexibility to do so. As it relates to specific funding associated with it, those decisions will be made. Obviously, given the resources we have, given future bond programs, as well as partnerships as we work with TxDOT, the COG, and any other types of organizations that fund our infrastructure and or look to create add additions to our existing transit systems. And so, again, equity is built in, I believe, and has been built into many of the plans that we've recently adopted, and it's something we will look at and consider when we begin to address those kind of issues around funding, particularly around implementation of the plans.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. That's all my question.
West, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Mayor, I wanted to, like everyone else, commend staff, particularly Gus and Majid for their work on this. All of the community members who put in hours and hours and months of work to get to where we are today, and our prior chair, Councilman Kleinman, and then also Chair Magoo for getting this to the finish line. And I really just wanted to point out some great language that staff built in here under Section 5, that we as a city will be prioritizing providing people with more choices on how they travel, with more higher quality multimodal networks. We're prioritizing connecting neighborhoods and jobs. We're prioritizing constructing fewer roads, lane miles, and investing more in streetscapes, enhanced bus service and rail transit, bike facilities, trails, sidewalks, and safety improvements. So it's really a understanding that people don't just travel via roads and cars anymore. We're getting more sophisticated in how we travel, and we're doing it in different ways. And then we're looking at greater development around our transit stops and on vacant or underutilized land in areas that could use development. So staff has really been listening to all of us who've been asking for activating city land, vacant land, and pushing that growth towards our transit stops so we can really maximize the use of those. So great job, staff. Thank you, Mayor.
Anyone else wish to speak all for or against item 19? Hearing none.
I'm here.
Oh, then this Arnold, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you very much. I'm excited, of course, about this strategic plan, but I did want to make sure I look at a couple of things. I pointed out a couple of concerns with the resolution. I see that one of the comments I wanted to make sure of on the strategic plan on the environment, there was a reference to the market value analysis. So who could answer this question for me as it relates to the MVA and how in the southern sector? Because what my position is that we can't get housing, what good is it to have transportation? Because most of the MVA affects in my district very negatively.
Hey, this is Dr. Johnson, Councilmember Arnold. State that question again one more time for me.
All right. For the MVA, pretty much what we've been experiencing is that the MVA continues to push back as we talk about tax credit investments. There's always a pushback in District 4. So if we keep getting the pushback for housing development, that is, and it's oftentimes we don't see just the non-tax credits coming in, what good is it going to do us to have a transportation policy that talks about equity in the MVA when we know we're not going to build housing? So how does that work?
You actually bring up a good point, and that's something we've been thinking about. As a document, as an approach, the MVA talks heavily about, let's call it, emerging areas where to invest. That is fine for those areas, but it's not doing much in areas that are not emerging, right? If that makes sense. So the context of the market is growing in one area and it's not taking off in another. What we are looking at doing is make sure we have that balance. So for areas that are not trending upwards, we can't say to them, you need to hold and wait until the market gets to you, because truthfully, it just doesn't work like that. What we need to do is come up with strategies that's going to start to bring these areas up, because there's no such thing as one market. There are sub-markets at multiple layers. How do we target that to make sure that through unintentional consequences, we are not sort of creating greater disparities by saying, well, you know what, sorry, we don't have anything for you because your area is not trending upwards. That is how we're going to look at it. So when you see any language, any thoughts about the MVA, we're not saying get rid of the MVA. What we're saying is that space where traditional markets, traditional developers that are seeking profit maximization, they won't go there. So we need to have a strategy for what we call submarkets that also have the potential for development and attraction, but it may not be at the traditional market rate returns that are normally achieved. So when we talk about equity with the market value analysis, that's really what we're talking about. How do we figure out that gap in the middle where traditional market forces are just not going to go? So hopefully that answers your question.
All right. Thank you. It does in a way, because we can't get any rooftops to bring in, quote, the businesses. So the equity is going to have to be in the plan, so we're not burdened with all of these connotations associated with perpetuation of poverty and all that other nonsense that we continue to push around the horseshoe into our policies. We're going to have to take some steps, and I think you've talked about that earlier. We need to do what Spike Lee said. We need to do the right thing and stop shucking and jiving around all these acronyms that continue to suppress and oppress the community. The other piece here, I was happy to see in the resolution, the environmental piece. But what I also want to make sure I address, as we talk about the CCAP and the environment, that as we move forward with this plan, we really take a holistic look in terms of how it's affecting our community's environment. So we're going to continue to see bicycles come in. They're thrown all on the sidewalks, and any other scooters or objects that may be could have contaminants or create just an eyesore. We need to make sure we have a plan that does not allow for that. The other piece I wanted to make sure I talked about strategically, I have a constituent located at Keystone Polk where the bus stop is actually in her front yard, basically. So when we look at where she is with people on the bench walking and knocking on her door, literally asking for money and what have you, you also have a point where you hear mufflers, cars revving. That site was put there, I would imagine, because of the need for transportation. But where she is now is she needs a sound wall. And I don't have any solutions for her in terms of what we can do as a city. So I would hope that we can plan more strategically about placement, definitely of bus stops, so that it's not in the person's personal yard. Now, I'm going to definitely look in to see if this can't be moved. But the bottom line is, moving forward, noise pollution is just as harmful to a neighborhood, and it also affects our health, sincerely. And so as we move forward, and also quick question, I was just recently apprised of this whole notion of these mufflers, can anyone speak to me on transportation on that? What can we do in this plan, maybe from environmental too, to offset or regulate so we're not being subjected to all of these mufflers who are being accelerated high in these vehicles that's hurting our seniors and definitely just communities at large? Can we include that in
terms of... Let's keep it narrowly tailored, Ms. Arnold. Okay. I understand. I feel your pain, though. I know you're talking about those phone apps.
Can we include that? Yeah. I'm kind of rambling there. Can we include that? Because they're getting frustrated with the environmental plan. Thanks, Mayor.
Do you want me to answer the question?
If you could as expeditiously as possible. Yeah, I'm just trying to keep absolutely. You on schedule here.
Absolutely, sir. I think that would be more of the regulatory piece, and it wouldn't be part of the Connect Dallas or the strategic mobility plan. And that's something I can follow up with you and Brett and John Fortune about this specific
one. Okay, please do, because that's part of quality of life and environment. Otherwise, the resolution sounds good. But I wanted to make sure we're advocating for those that I've heard from that are impacted negatively.
30 seconds.
Thank you, Mayor. We appreciate you for keeping me on time. I appreciate that.
I'm trying to keep everything moving. That's all. No problem. Anyone else wishing to speak on for or against item 19? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Next item, Madam Secretary.
Agenda item 39. It's a resolution to ratify an emergency construction services contract with Phoenix One Restoration and Construction LTD for emergency repairs for the Hall of State Emergency Restoration Project located at 3939 Grand Avenue in Fair Park, not to exceed $2,770,979.91. This item was pulled by Councilmember Mendelson.
Is there a motion?
Move to approve.
Is there a second? It's been moved and second discussion. Ms. Mendelson.
Thank you. I'm wondering if staff can tell us if the damages were covered by insurance and what our deductible is.
Thank you, Ms. Mendelson. I'll take that question. Yes, the building is covered by insurance and will be covered for this event. The deductible for the city is $750,000 for the event, the weather event. And so we will be filing a claim for all of the damages to city facilities and paying that deductible.
Great. And what account is that coming from?
The risk reserve account.
Great. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Anyone else wishes to speak on or against item 39? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Ayes have it, Madam Secretary. Next item.
We now move to your items for individual consideration. Agenda item 44 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning you have individual appointments. To the Judicial Nominating Commission, Katrina B. Johnson is nominated by Councilmember Atkins. To the Redistricting Commission, Barbara Brown Larkin is being nominated by Councilmember Gates, and Kristen Scholler is being nominated by Councilmember Blewett. To the Veteran Affairs Commission, Peter Gray Smith is being nominated by Councilmember Blewett.
Is there a motion?
Moved.
Yes.
The move is second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. Next item.
Agenda item 45 is a resolution amending the City Plan Commission's rules of procedure by adding a new standing committee, the Comprehensive Land Use Plan Committee, and dissolving two standing committees, Urban Design Advisory and Trinity River Committees.
Is there a motion?
Mendelson, I move to move this item to committee for a briefing.
Is there a second?
Second.
Move and second. Discussion? Ms. Mendelson?
Yes.
Anyone? Ms. Mendelson, go ahead.
Yes. Can staff explain why this wasn't briefed at committee previously?
Hey, this is Dr. Johnson, Councilmember. I'm going to turn this over to Pierre. Pierre, are you on the meeting? And can you respond to this question?
Yes, Dr. Johnson, and good morning, Council Members. This is Pierre Chappell, Director of Planning. There were prior opportunities for briefing this item to the Economic Development Committee. There were, due to a lot of competition for items, we were unable to schedule a briefing. We would be happy to do that briefing this time.
Well, thank you. So, you know, this is one of our charter commissions. I think it makes a lot of really important decisions, and I'm not sure that we've had quite the oversight that we should for this. We've certainly talked about having some changes to the committees, and I don't think that's a surprise to anyone here. But the details of the rules that have come before us really haven't had the council input I think they should. And I'll give you one example of something that I'm hoping to bring forward, which is that the subcommittees that they have no requirements for the membership in terms of geography. So you can have one of these smaller committees of seven people that are all from the same district or very close districts. And I think that we need to make sure we have, if not representation from all council districts, at least all the members are not from the same districts. And so that we have that diversity of opinion with geography, because we all face different challenges and our residents need different things. My understanding is that the Forward Dallas plan is going to be briefed monthly to one of these subcommittees, which again, we're not going to get that same level of detail. And I think we just need to be able to look at this. So I would love this actually not to come to economic development, but I would suggest it come to either housing or to government performance, because it's rules. But I mean, I'll leave that to I don't know, the mayor or staff, but I think this is not ready. Unless there's some urgent reason, it has to happen sooner. Thank you.
Councilman
Atkins?
Before we get to you, Ms. Atkins, was somebody trying to get in or respond to that, Peter?
Yes. Yeah, this is Pierre Chaka, Director of Planning and Urban Design. We would be happy to come back to a committee. With regard to urgency, there are two other items, 46 and 47, with regard to initiating the Forward Dallas process. So this item is closely related to it and will one way or the other affect the schedule of the Forward Dallas process. Thank you.
I would just like to offer that I'd be happy to put it on the May agenda for government performance if you guys want it to come there. Thank you.
Mr. Atkins, 5 minutes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Chaco, thank you also. Thank you, Sherman Mendelson. I believe if you look at item 47, it do talk about Forward Dallas Conference Plan. I believe this item is very important in economic development policy and everything. And we do have an economic development committee scheduled for Monday on May 3rd. So, Mr. Mayor,
I just want to confirm we're on the right item. We're on item 45, correct?
Yeah, but I'm going to 47 because it's kind of referred to Forward Dallas and Pierre.
Okay.
Reference item 47. In a Forward Dallas plan.
Okay. Just want to make sure we're on the same page. Gotcha.
Yeah, we're on 45, right. And so what I'm saying is that we do have a economic development meeting on Monday, on the 3rd, and I would recommend it's just bringing it to the economic development on the 3rd. Then that way, Chaco, I guess item 47, if we're not on item 47, can I reference item 47 in this item 45, Mr. Mayor?
You can reference it, but we're not debating it yet.
Okay, I want to reference 47 that when we get there is number one that. Okay, let me wait till we get to 47 then. On 45, Charco, I think they should come to economic policy development committee on the 3rd. I think we can put that on the agenda by then, and we can kind of scrub the issue there. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, if I might respond. Yes. Thank you, Councilmember Atkins. Yes, as you mentioned, the May 3rd briefing that will be scheduled to the Economic Development Committee will also cover this topic, since, as I mentioned, it is related. And so you can expect that the Economic Development Committee will hear about it.
Yes, sir.
I'm wishing to speak on for against Ms. Mendelson's motion on item 45. Would you respect the motion, Ms.? Go ahead, Mr. Narvaez.
No, you can. I don't mind the motion being restated first.
Cool. And then I'll get right to you. Could you restate the motion, Ms. Mendelson? We'll make sure we're on the same page.
When my motion was to move this item to a committee for a briefing.
So your motion was to move it to a committee?
To a committee of the mayor's choice. How about that?
Well, I just want to know what the motion was. I don't have a preference here at all. I'm just trying to clarify, since your motion was not a straight motion to approve. It was a motion.
No, I didn't specify what committee it would go to.
Ms. Palomino, do we need that right now? Would that be in order just to do a quick amendment to this? To put a committee in there. I know I'm sorry to keep jumping to you today, but it's a more interesting morning than I thought we were going to have.
Robert's Rules of Order says that if the main question is to be sent to a standing committee, the motion should specify the name of the committee.
Since my colleague, Chairman Atkins, would like to have it briefed to his committee, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Is there any objection to the motion being amended to reflect that it would go to economic development? I'm asking I'm doing this by group. Yes. Hearing none, it's still ordered. So now the amendment's been the motion's been amended to reflect specifically it's going to be remanded to economic development. Anyway, so now we're back to where we were. A motion on item 45. Anyone else wish to speak on for or against the motion to remand to economic development? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it, Madam Secretary. It's the item for mandatory economic development.
The next item, 46 and 47, must be considered collectively. Item 46, authorize one, a project-specific agreement with Dallas County for the Transit-Oriented Development Planning and Implementation Project Major Capital Improvement Program, MCIP 10227 and MCIP 40221, to the receipt and deposit of funds in an amount not to exceed $234,000 in the Capital Projects Reimbursement Fund, and three, the establishment of appropriations in the amount not to exceed $234,000 in the Capital Projects Reimbursement Fund, total not to exceed $234,000. Item 47, authorize an 18-month service contract to develop an update to the Ford Dallas Comprehensive Land Use Plan for the Department of Planning and Urban Design, Housel Levine Associates, LLC, most advantageous proposal of 14, not to exceed $649,960.
I'm looking for a motion as it relates to both of these items. Is there such a motion? Been moved and seconded to adopt both items 46 and 47. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Atkins, you're going to have 5 minutes. Items 46 and 47 are before the body at this time.
I guess, Dr. Johnson, the 18-month service contract.
I'm good. What's up? I got your email. Here, let me get it.
You got to go on to whoever that is.
Per scripts.
Okay. I guess, Pierre, Dr. John, on the 47, the 18-month service contract, the land use plans was designed. Was this a RFP?
Yes, sir, it was.
Yes.
And this was the low bid or the best value?
It was the best value.
And have this firm had did any work with the city of Dallas before?
The team, the respondent actually includes a team that consists of a prime contractor and several subcontractors. Among the prime contractor has not done work in the city of Dallas before, but the team consists of members that have done extensive work in the city.
Okay, so we talking about a Forward Dallas comprehensive plan. Would it be best to have someone on a team who do know the landscape of the city of Dallas? I mean, you said the prime contractor who got the contract, but they do have some, I guess, subcontractor to do that. I don't want to get in a situation that we're looking at Forward Dallas that they do not understand the history of the city of Dallas when they are going out and trying to gather this information.
Yes, Councilman Atkins, again, this is Bill Chaffer, Director of Planning and Urban Design. Those were all very important considerations in the process. I wanted to point out that the way this consultant team has been was based on the assumption that a very significant component of the work would be done by staff. The staff in the department, planning and urban design, as well as other departments that will provide support, are going to be and have been doing a fair amount of work with regard to making sure that we have a really good knowledge base as part of it. We identified a really important component of the consultant team related to providing specific expertise related to scenario planning, which the prime contractor brings to the table. But we also made sure that the team consists of important subcontractors who have extensive local experience with both planning as well as community engagement. Sure that we have the best possible combination of skills.
And what departments, you mentioned department, which department would be assisting this the consultant? What departments would be on the bar?
The project would be led by the planning and urban design department, but there are going to be several key departments that will play an important role. And I'll list the major ones. In some respects, we will be including all departments as well as multiple other agencies. But some of the key departments are the ones that you're all familiar with have been playing an important role in recent city policy. So, for example, we would have the housing department because of its role with the comprehensive housing policy, the economic development department with its role in the development policy, the transportation department with the mobility plan that's on today's agenda, the Office of Environmental Quality with its role on the Comprehensive Environmental and Climate Action Plan, the Office of Equity and Inclusion because of recent work on the Resilience Plan and the Equity Indicators Report. And so I've kind of hit the highlights of some of the major. The plan then will focus primarily on land use and land development policy, and to the extent that it also has a significant impact on infrastructure, we would be including the bond office and the public works department, as well as major departments like parks and recreation and Dallas Water Utility, so that we can take appropriate account of infrastructure roles and impact.
And tell me how you're going to do the outreach with the community. When we look at Forward Dow, sometimes that the right neighborhood and the right community is not part of it. And that's my concern, is that it's a small group community that is at the table and the other part of the community do not have a seat at the table. So how are we going to outreach to make sure we have a diversified community, diversified neighborhood is part of this plan? Are part of the consultant to do outreach. How are we going to do that?
Yes, sir. That is a great and really important question. It's going to be an issue that will be thought about all the way. I mean, we've been thinking about this for the last year, and we will be paying a lot of attention to it throughout the process. It will be an ongoing effort. We intend to use a wide range of tools and techniques to reach out to the community. We have initiated recently in planning and urban design an important first effort through an ambassador program that our department has initiated, where we are proposing to cultivate community leadership, particularly in areas that are typically underrepresented, so that we can create a group of individuals who are rooted in the community, who are kept directly informed about the process and can play a role in some grassroots networking to promote awareness. We will have multiple mechanisms by which we would be, whether they be web-based or virtual, as well as to the extent that COVID-19 allows us, in-person events located throughout the city. We will also be engaging in a representative sample survey to ensure that at the key point in this process, we can get a really broad-based and representative set of opinions and input from the community.
I guess this question would be to Dr. Johnson. I've been around the Forward Dallas Comprehensive Land Use Plan for many years, 2010. My concern is when we go out, it seems like all the communities who want to have a seat at the table, not at the table. So I want to make sure the consultant, how are we going to make sure that all the communities do get a seat at the table to get their input? It will not be overrided by someone else. And I've seen that over and over again because residents said, hey, I did not have a seat at the table. There was someone else driving the train. Someone else was conducting the train down there. So when we do this and roll this out, would you come back and say, here are the people at the table, here are the neighborhood, and here are the community, and how can we promote that to the resident in the community and make sure that they are on the train going down the track?
Absolutely, Councilmember Atkins. You have our assurance that we are going to go well beyond the call of duty to make sure that we reach every segment within this community, including those who would normally have not been at the table. So anticipate us coming back with sort of a description of a strategy that will basically convey how we're going to do that.
Right. And what is the timeline?
Here.
Yeah, on the process. What is the timeline on the process? And what is they're going to come back to the committee, you know, 30 days. Tell me the timeline. When we're going to roll this out. Give me the timeline.
Yes, sir. This is Pierre Schaffer, Director of Planning and Urban Design. Subject to council action today, we would expect that during the month of May and June, we would be gearing up for launch with getting a consultant team on board, sharing work that's been done before, setting up a framework for interdepartmental coordination. And we expect that by June, as soon as June, we should be able to launch initial community engagement. And we expect that the process from the time we begin, from the time we launch, to the time that we have a draft plan that can be taken through the public hearing process would be about 1 year. So this is a, and I would describe that as an ambitious schedule. We will certainly attempt to do it faster, but in order to do all the kind of community engagement that we were referring to, we believe it'll take roughly that amount of time. From the point that we have a draft plan that can be made public, we expect that the public hearing adoption process can take 3 to 4 months thereafter before it is on a council agenda like today for action.
Mm-hmm. Councilman Atkins, I want to add something to that. June will represent 16 years since the last update of the comprehensive plan. On Pierre's schedule, we're going to be probably into year 17, almost 18, before we have a new comprehensive plan. And I just think that by standards, we've got to pick up the pace to get this done. Because 16 years, 17, almost 18 years is really totally out of the norm in terms of timing to get this stuff done. So I just really wanted to impart that as a sense of urgency, given the time we're up against in terms of updating what should be our sort of preeminent document that talks about, you know, land use in the future, sort of direction of the city. So I just wanted to put that on the table.
And I just want to thank you, Dr. Jones. I just want to try to make sure the equity, the inequities in this forward dollar plan, and try to make sure the resident and the community involved. And for so many years that they not involved, and they said we just didn't know how to get involved. I'm trying to make sure we do spread a wide net into community. We're talking about zoning. We're talking about, you know, inequities in the southern part of Dallas. And right now, this is an opportunity. 17 years is too long, but we got to make sure every department, and we need to know what department at the table. We need to know what community at the table. We need to know who is driving the ship. And right now, I think we are driving the ship, but we got to make sure the resident is on board the ship while we're going down a calm water. And with that, you know, I just want to be informed and make sure we got a timeline and make sure we got an update, you know. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Council specific on for against the combined items 46, 47. Mr. Kleinman, I heard. You're running out for 5 minutes.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I'm on 46. I think it's important that we acknowledge the support we're getting out of Dallas County for this particular item. Their MCPIP program has been very helpful on a lot of projects throughout the city, and it's just important that we acknowledge their support for the items that we're moving forward in the city, and just wanted to publicly thank them. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else wishes to be gone for against items 46, 47? Here.
Mendelson.
Ms. Mendelson. Sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing you guys this morning. I apologize for having to ask so many times. Ms. Mendelson, 5 minutes.
Thank you. I just want to first say thank you to Chairman Atkins for his important comments about the community input that's needed on this plan. I completely agree. I also want to say that I've had a lot of questions about the cost of the plan. $650,000 just seems like an excessive amount of money to pay for this. And there's no question it's needed. There's no question that we need a new comprehensive plan, and I'm 100% behind that. But to hear that it should cost $1 million and that we're actually saving money at only $650,000 for the plan, I think it's shocking. And this is not my area of expertise, so perhaps that's true. But I just have to say that it gives me a lot of pause to approve an item to spend this much money on a plan. The other thing is the bigger question, which is, what's the point of having this plan when people can't get a permit? There's no land use that's going to be needed when people can't build anything. And until we fix that permit office, I'm not even sure why this is so important. So, Dr. Johnson, you mentioned the phrase pick up the pace. There's a great article in the newspaper today talking again about the problems of our permit office. And I just don't even see the urgency of doing this project at this moment when here it has been over a year. We have thrown technology at the problem. We've thrown staffing and outsourcing at the problem. But people still can't get permits to do anything with their land. So, you know, we're going to approve this, but the bigger question still is lurking, and this is almost a detail because people can't get their work done in the city.
Point well taken, Councilmember Mendelson. Point well taken.
With Mr. Mayor. Mr. Narvaez, you're running us for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to echo the sentiments that my colleague, Councilmember Mendelson, just stated. We have to make the permitting office the highest priority. We are losing money for the city of Dallas in revenue like there's no tomorrow, and we have budgets that we have to deal with. And when we're starting to lose tens of millions of dollars over a course of a year, these are dollars that in the next budget we could actually be giving some kind of a tax relief to our residents, or we could pay for things like helping seniors get a tax relief as well. So I hope that after this is passed, that we can actually really get on the permitting office and get that fixed. Like it needs to have been fixed a year ago, and the pandemic is no longer an excuse. And, you know, we gave you all some money to take care of the next 3 months. Let's get this taken care of. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else wishes to speak on for or against items 46, 47? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Let's have it, Madam Secretary. Next item.
Agenda item 48, authorize an amendment to the Targeted Neighborhood Enhancement Program statement to clarify that one of the purposes of the program is to promote economic development by providing funding for the acquisition of improved and unimproved properties, demolition of existing structures, and assistance for private, commercial, industrial, retail, residential, and mixed-use, mixed-income development in targeted neighborhoods.
Motion.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. Next item.
49, authorize one acquisition from Peterson Lane Partners, LLC, of approximately 72,559 square feet of land, of commercially improved land, addressed as 5580 Peterson Lane, located on the south side of Peterson Lane, approximately 140 feet west of Montford Drive, for the future Central Park and the Valley View Gallery, Galleria area, pursuant to the Targeted Neighborhood Enhancement Program, and to the establishment of appropriations in an amount not to exceed $213,301.46 in the Valley View Galleria Open Space Fund, not to exceed $5,677,000.
Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second and seconded. Any discussion? Ms. Middleton, you're recognized for 5 minutes. Item 49.
Thank you. Well, there's no question that this is needed. It's needed for the quality of life of our residents in North Dallas who, beyond a library, don't have any cultural centers in D13, D11, or D12. But my question is about the maintenance and operations of the center. When I asked about this, I was given last year's expenses and revenues, which is great, but and it's, you know, cash positive. But my question is, what's happening in 2 years and 5 years and 10 years? Like, what's the forecast to operate it? Where is that money going to come from? And if this money is going to be from parks, will parks need a larger allocation, or this is something that's already in their forecast? I'm just trying to understand what this means for us beyond the actual acquisition.
This is Joey Zapata, Assistant City Manager. Thank you for your question. So the net operating income for the property has been positive for several years, and we are retaining the same property manager to continue doing the good work to forecast expenses, manage the vacancies, and continue to keep it so that it maintains positive revenue that can be set aside in parks in a multi-year fund to help offset any of those costs. So the long and short of it is we're planning for the future to be able to maintain it without any additional cost to the general fund. And yeah, there's my answer.
Great, thank you.
We on hold? Can y'all hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if my okay.
I may have lost connectivity. I don't have additional questions.
And I can hear Ms. Mendelson. I see the mayor is on mute, so I don't know if he knew that or if he just stepped away. Oh, there's Mayor Pro Tem Medrano.
Medrano?
Yes. Any more discussion on this item?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
The mayor's having technical difficulty.
Mayor Medrano?
Yes, okay. Go ahead, Councilmember Rice.
Thank you, Mayor. What I just wanted to point out on this one is that the great thing about this is it is part of our cultural plan that we passed a few years ago, and this is that expansion. And when we talk about equity, I think one of the things that we always think is that equity is only for the South or the West and not for the North. And this is actually a place where we are not equitable in the city of Dallas in the North, which is that we don't have cultural facilities in the northern, you know, part of the city once you leave the bathhouse in East Dallas. Once you go further north, there's really nothing left for anybody to go enjoy and see. So this is a really exciting thing that's going to happen, and I want to congratulate and thank my colleague, Mr. Kleinman, for his advocacy in getting this work done. So thank you, Mr. Kleinman. I think this is it's not the very end for you, but it's getting closer to the end of your 8 years, and I know that you've advocated for this for a very long time, and I appreciate it, and I want to just tell you thank you for not taking your eye off the ball on this one. And we're down to the last couple minutes of the fourth quarter, but you scored the touchdown, so good job. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah, Councilman Atkins.
Councilman Atkins. Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know, we talked about Valley View for almost a decade, and it's now it's coming, the puzzle is coming together. And I just want to thank, you know, Kleinman, Chairman Kleinman for his hard work and staying at it, you know, constantly, you know, every minute of the day. And it looks like Valley View is going to be a great venture to the city of Dallas. But also, you know, without Valley View, without this, I would never have Red Bird Mall. And so I just want to make sure, put everybody on the record that Valley View, the Galleria was going there and all the developments is there. It's always said that some good from the north comes to the south. And if he did not share that wealth to the south, I would not have River Mall and the opportunity with jobs and creativity there and hearing the hard work he done. And I know that, you know, this is last term out, but hey, salute to you, Chairman McClyman, to stick with me and working with my community. And also with Valley View is now, we're looking at the doors open. We just got to make sure that we keep the investment in Valley View because that is a property tax increase to our neighborhoods, so we pay our public service, but it is something that have been created to help the North and South and bridge the gap and also help bridge the inequities that we got. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Ackman.
Anyone else?
Blackman.
Basildua.
All right. Go ahead, Councilmember Blackman, then Councilmember Basildua.
Okay. Thank you. Just real quick, Mr. Kleinman, want to congratulate you on this. And I guess you can still come to the bathhouse. I mentioned that last week, and I'm still welcoming you over to East Dallas. But I hope that you will welcome me up to your part of Dallas to visit this. And I just wanted to, this is your last, May as a council member. So I just wanted to show some love and appreciation for all your hard work. Cause I know we've been working on that. I think even prior to you getting on council. So thank you for your work.
Battle Duo.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to also just echo sentiments that have been shared. I know that this project not only speaks to, some closure of a lot of priorities coming together, even since our colleague sat on the park board, to now the tenure of your long service to our city. I think that it's excellent to see you be able to have this close out at the end of your tenure, and I'm very happy to support this. So congratulations and job well done.
Any other council members?
Yes, Mayor.
Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you. And I also want to chime in on the remarks that Councilmember Atkins made in terms of just the partnership and extension of just really, I guess it started as an equity project that we didn't call equity back when it started. But just in the sense of that you have council members working together is where we need to go moving forward. And I think this is part of what Dr. Johnson and Mr. Broadnax are also alluding to. We're going to have to go ahead and take those big steps and put on those big boy and big girl shoes and do what is right. And so I commend and appreciate and applaud Mr. Kleinman for continuing to fight for that cultural experience that I too have to fight for, because I'm in the southern sector of District 4 and we don't have a real true cultural venue here either. So we're looking forward to seeing more partnerships around the council so that we can make it happen and not worry so much about the popularity of our constituents in terms of whether or not we will be reelected. We need to do the right thing. So I know that I'm excited today, but we also just want to just do a quick thank you, Mr. Kleinman. We'll hear more accolades as we move forward, but this is, of course, your last April. And I just wanted to make sure I go on the record of saying thank you, thank you, thank you for your leadership. And I'm going to try to continue to emulate, replicate, duplicate, and enunciate, and elaborate on everything that I have learned from you in terms of strategies and tools and resources to make it work, not only for District 4, but the rest of the city of Dallas, so we can begin to look like a council that works on behalf of those who sent us down to 1500 Barilla to do the right thing. Thank you.
Any other council members?
I'll
save you for last, of course.
Anyone? Thank you very much, Mayor. Thank you to all my colleagues for your accolades and, of course, support on this item and all these processes that we've been going through in District 11 and across the city. They are multi-year projects to bring to fruition, and I just want to encourage you and any newcomers to the council to embrace projects that are in process, even take credit for them, but just keep them moving along. It takes years at the city to have successes, and we've had many and will continue to have many more across the city in every district. So just keep working it, keep fighting the fight, keep looking for funding opportunities, and they will come to fruition. And I'm looking forward to this, and I'm looking forward to sharing in other great projects in every single district going forward. Again, thank you very much, and I appreciate your support on this item. That's all, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next item.
Agenda item 50, authorize supplemental agreement number 1 to 1, convert the service contract with Sigma Surveillance, Inc., DBA, STS 360 from an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity agreement to a fixed price, not to exceed contract of $16,327,955.38, and to reallocate funding within the contract from camera purchases to pay for services required for the expansion of the video surveillance camera system to be known as the Real-Time Crime Center.
For approval.
Second.
Discussion? No discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Mayor, this concludes your items for this first session.
It is 11:40, and we will be back around 1 o'clock.
Alrighty. It is now 1:19 p.m. and this meeting is now back in session. Madam Secretary, where are we on the agenda?
We're now on your zoning agenda.
Okay, let's proceed. Mr. Basildua, go ahead. Mr. Basildua, are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
For Z2?
What was the item?
Yes, item Z2.
Go ahead. Yes, Z2.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to defer item Z2 until August 11th, 2021.
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Great. Any discussion?
Nope, this is similar to the thoroughfare plan that we had last agenda meeting, and I just need more time to work with the stakeholders and community surrounding before this gets to council.
Wonderful. Anyone else wishes to speak off or against the motion to defer item Z2? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. Next item.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember
Basildua,
would like to be recognized on item
Z5. Yes, Z5. Okay, Mr. Basildua, you're recognized.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to defer this zoning matter until June 9th, 2021.
And
it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
No, sir.
Anyone else wishing to go for against the deferral on Z5? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Next item.
Thank you. There are no zoning consent items, so we'll now move to your first.
We can't hear the city secretary.
The city secretary is speaking, but no one can hear you.
Thank you.
Okay. Can you hear her now?
No, let me try.
Nope.
Okay, we're still working on it.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you. There are no zoning cases on consent. Therefore, we'll take up your individual zoning items. Your first individual zoning item, Z1. Z1 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting a planned development subdistrict for MF-2 multiple family subdistrict uses on property on the southwest corner of Carlisle Street and North Hall Street.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 871 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 169 replies in favor and 652 in opposition.
There are 24 speakers on this item. Each speaker will be given 3 minutes to speak. Your first speaker, David Hairston.
Good afternoon, Council. Thank you for having us yet again for the zoning case of our property. This is where the rubber meets the road. This vote will affect the King Trail. It'll affect Oak Lawn Park. It'll affect the neighborhood. The streets cannot take the amount of traffic for such a large building. The Oak Lawn plan will basically be ignored, and it'll be a domino effect throughout the neighborhood. This is not the right property for this plot of land, and it's where the rubber meets the road. It's important for the city council to understand that you're going to displace people from their homes, teachers, students, people with disabilities, and it's going to go against everything the city is doing for affordable housing. Everybody works hard here. They pay their taxes, and I ask you to vote no on this project.
Thank you. Your next speaker is William Halliburton.
Thank you very much. Each neighborhood has its own unique feel. Earlier today, I was at Victory Park and noticed the unique difference of that part of community, that neighborhood, the towering high rises. It has something special. Well, Uptown and Oak Lawn also have something unique, something very special. And it's the mix of our high rise and our mid and low rise that make this part of Dallas so very popular. It's the magnet. It's the place where people want to be. It's why we moved from the M Streets to condominium living in this area. But as one of our previous speakers pointed out, this is not the right development for that property. We need MF2, real MF2. In our neighborhood. Yes, it's going to be open to compromise and some changes, but without MF2, we will truly lose the uniqueness of our Uptown and Oak Lawn area. I strongly ask you to please vote no to this proposal.
Thank you. Dennis Head.
Yes. Can you hear me and see me?
Yes.
Okay, good. My name is Dennis Head. I live at 3525 Turtle Creek. I've been in this area for 20 years. I'm also a real estate developer, and I've looked at other property in this area, and I have respected the zoning and the Oak Lawn plan, the Oak Lawn committee, some of the other neighborhood groups. And frankly, the reason I decided to speak today was to not reiterate all of the many points that you'll likely hear today, but to say this one thing. When you allow somebody like Lincoln Properties to come in and rezone, you are essentially giving them potentially a $40 to $50 million subsidy. The value of that land was held back because of the current zoning. It's obviously released when you allow them to have more density, less green space. It is a subsidy to a big, large corporation that doesn't need it. There's other people who have been very responsible in this community. I think of the Hardwood Development Company and all their work along Harry Hines. I look at the old Parkland with Trammell Crow. And I even see that the Perot companies are choosing to build on the west side a tall building or a couple of tall buildings at 240 feet, and yet their own headquarters, which are on Turtle Creek, they limited it to the 36-foot limit. It bothers me that Lincoln Properties was soundly defeated a couple of years ago, and all they've done is wait for a different mix on city council. None of us have the voice that's as strong as theirs, but individually we have elected representatives and a mayor who we expect to represent us, and I'm asking you to hear us. This is blatantly wrong. It is bullying, and it is essentially handing a profit center to somebody at the expense of thousands and thousands of people in this neighborhood. That's my statement.
Thank you. Brenda Cronenberg.
Thank you. Thank you, City Council staff and attendees, for your service and for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Brenda Cronenberg. I'm the city liaison for the Oak Lawn Committee. My address is 3500 Maple Avenue, Suite 440, Dallas, Texas, 75219. The Oak Lawn Committee was established in 1982 for dual purposes. We were representing the neighbors' point of view and combating community deterioration by upholding the goals of the PD 193 plan. We also decreased the burden on city government by improving the relationships between neighbors and developers via communication, education, and compromise. The Oak Lawn Committee has accolades from developers for creating better projects for our community. We have a successful track record of negotiating with developers, so our membership votes to support well over the majority of cases that come to us for review. Normally, developers bring PD 193 projects to the Oak Lawn Committee as part of the required neighborhood notification. Lincoln Properties has brought projects before, including this Katy Trail project twice before. However, our membership has not seen this project since 2018. The project has been revised since then. Lincoln Properties has been invited to present on several occasions, but thus far has declined to ask the community for their opinion via majority vote from the Oak Lawn Committee. It's our policy that we cannot support, nor can we deny support for a project that has not been presented, discussed, and put to a vote by our membership. The Oak Lawn Committee requests that the City Council honor the tradition of at least asking for the community point of view before voting on this project. We request you require Lincoln Properties to bring this PD 193 project to the Oak Lawn Committee for a community vote, and then consider the vote results when making your final decision on this project. Thank you, Council, for your time and your consideration.
Thank you. Bart Noble. Bart Noble.
Excuse me. I hopefully I'm unmuted at this point.
We can hear you.
A little more than 100 years ago, when the world was in the midst of the Great Depression, the Club Aluminum Company based in Chicago was facing near certain bankruptcy. In an attempt to save the company, its president, Herbert J. Taylor, drew up a 24-word code of ethics for his company to follow. It was the guide for sales, production, advertising, and all relations with dealers and customers. It was called the four-way test and was credited for the company's ultimate survival. I first learned of the rubric and its impact on decision-making nearly 20 years ago when I joined the Rotary Club of Park City. The test is this. First, is it the truth? Second, is it fair to all concerned? Third, will it build goodwill and better friendships? And fourth, will it be beneficial to all concerned? I'm here today to urge you to vote against the zoning request before you today, and I will use the remainder of my time to share my perspective on how this zoning proposal performs against the four-way test. Is it the truth? The developer's calling it a plan development sub-district amendment, and technically that is a valid proposal. The request is that you approve nearly double the existing MF2 zoning height restrictions. In other words, what MF3 zoning allows. The requested dwelling unit density is almost three times the dwelling units per acre of what's allowed in MF2 zoning. Again, MF3. Calling this request something other than upzoning to MF3 is really just hiding the truth. Is it fair to all concerned? Consider MF3 zone properties. Their property values are being negatively impacted by current developer perspective, but they can purchase property zoned MF2 and upzone for a total cost of less than current MF3 property values. You consider other developers and the unfair advantage that this developer seeks. It's not fair, and it fails that test. Will it build goodwill and better friendships? The Turtle Creek Neighborhood Association describes the opposition to this project as unprecedented. The Oak Lawn Committee, Dallas Homeowners League, seven nearby HOAs, and hundreds of individual residents of the neighborhood have all formally opposed the project. And since the Dallas City Council voted down the request roughly 2 years ago, the developers made no changes to the project to address community concerns. It's clear the developer here does not appear to be concerned about fomenting goodwill in the community, nor are they building better friendships. Will it be beneficial to all concerned? This project proposes to demolish 115 affordable housing units and replace only a fraction of those lots. The project will result in the loss of at least 91 trees. And here are some concerns from the neighborhood and Dallas City planning officials.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the project fails the four-way test and should
fail. Your time is up. Thank you. Anthony Page.
Hi, I'm Anthony Page. Thank you for your service and for allowing me to speak today. I'm the president of the Vine Homeowners Association, which consists of 63 homes located directly across the street from the subject site. This is an unusual case, to be sure. Lots of passionate people for it and people against it, and it's easy to see why. The applicant's representative, by her own admission, has refused to engage with the community. This upzoning application, should you approve it, would grant the applicant and developer between, we estimate, $20 to $30 million value in additional development rights to split up without any meaningful neighborhood benefits. The owners get a 75 to 100% premium to the property's current market value to sell out and exit the neighborhood. Lincoln, on the other hand, gets property at a significantly lower cost than competing developers who are buying more expensive land in the neighborhood already zoned for high density. For the most part, supporters are either directly sharing in the proceeds, would like to take advantage of similar upzoning schemes to sell their own older properties at a premium and exit the neighborhood, or real estate developers and or real estate industry service providers. In contrast, those in opposition consist of constituents who have invested in homes here with the intent to stay for the long term. This is a precedent-setting case, and you've got a simple call to make. As Dallas continues to grow and prosper, are you going to continue to protect neighborhoods in the urban core of the city, or are you going to give them away to developers and speculators? If you do this, you won't be getting new development. You'll simply be pulling it away from underutilized but higher-priced commercially zoned sites in the area where high-density development is already permitted, of which there are plenty. You will also be granting one developer, Lincoln, a significant financial advantage over its competitors. The consequences of this significant policy deviation from the Oak Lawn Plan and Comprehensive Plan should be permitted would be neighborhood destabilization, including the loss of hundreds of units of well-located affordable housing between the Park Cities and Central Expressway, significant losses of green space and old-growth tree canopy, and an unmanageable traffic situation. These consequences are all well-described in official reports, which the City Council has previously commissioned and approved. In any case, due to the rapidity with which this case has been processed, there are material factual errors in the case file and CPC transcript which need to be addressed. We encourage you to either reject this proposal or remand it back to CPC for further work and cleanup of the significant factual errors which exist in the current case file. Thank you.
Thank you. Hilda Rodriguez.
Hi. Muted? Hello?
We can hear you.
Hello?
Okay. We can hear you, Ms. Yes.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Hilda Rodriguez, and I live on 3920 Travis Street, Unit 24. This is just a few blocks up by Cole Park. And the reason I'm opposed to this project is because this project has a building, it's a request that goes against the principles of the of development for the Oakland area. The building envelope setback definition and the streetscape that are intended to create the street scale to unify and create a sense of harmony and continuity through the whole of Oakland to promote the street activity and incorporation of a tree canopy. This project disregards that plan for all these setbacks and to create this ambiance, and it's just like a wall straight up and ignores all of that, which should be applied regardless of the density of the project or whether it's MF2, MF3, G3, O, or whatever. So we think that this design ignores basic principles of the Oakland plan that would bring all this aesthetic and unification of harmony to the whole neighborhood. It promotes the destabilization of MS2 zoning in the area, which may also call for a trickle effect affecting other areas nearby, like where I live. We see it as a threat for destabilizing the opportunity to buy more condominiums that are low-rise and that are still affordable. It eliminates the for-sale product, definitely, by eliminating 70 units, and it also is in opposition from a large number of constituents and neighbors that are affected by this decision. Please listen to your constituents, we that live in the area, we that vote for you, we that always want this neighborhood to develop, but within a certain set of guidelines that we can expect and we can plan for, not when they come up as a surprise or because of the persistence of developers. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Sue Kreider.
Yes. My name is Sue Kreider. I live at 3401 Lee Parkway, number 606, Dallas 75219. I've lived in the area for well over 15 years. Like many, I deliberately moved to this area because of its character. I am sincerely asking all city council members and the mayor to listen to our neighborhood and respect our neighborhood and the vision of keeping our neighborhood where it needs to be. This massive upzoning in this location is the wrong project for this location, and the consequences for years to come will have a ripple effect, which is going to destabilize this beautiful neighborhood and the parks that we enjoy and are so central to the value of this area. I also want to say that there's been so much discussion about affordable housing. Raising 120 units of affordable housing and giving back a net loss of 99 to accommodate this development is just the wrong thing for this neighborhood. We respectfully ask that you listen to us, the people who live in the neighborhood, who thrive in this neighborhood, and who want to keep our neighborhood as valuable as it is today. Thank you all for your service.
Thank you. Brittany Key.
Salutations. I speak today before the City Council as both a constituent of District 14, as well as an actual resident of the Turtle Creek Terrace condominiums where I have lived for the past 8 years. My purpose today is to provide a voice for the members and renters of the HOA who have been woefully ignored throughout the entire process of the Lincoln Katie project, specifically the rezoning proposal being voted on today. I strongly oppose the rezoning proposal brought to you by Lincoln Properties and ask that you vote against it. I myself am legally blind. I lost my vision when I was a teenager. Turtle Creek Terrace gives me the accessibility needed to maintain independent living. The Upcreek and Oaklawn areas are one of the few parts of Dallas remaining that have the ability to accommodate the needs of people with disabilities like myself through the vital and direct access to public transportation, grocery stores, and essential services. Unfortunately, it is also an area where affordable housing is quickly vanishing. The contract Lincoln Properties currently has with the HOA of Turtle Creek Terrace was initiated and voted on over 5 years ago based on a market value that is now over 5 years old. The weight of that vote was calibrated by the square footage of property owned at that time. Investors with more units had more power during this decision process. Some of those investors have since sold their units. Therefore, the future of residents such as myself is being determined today by a rezoning proposal for an outdated contract that does not reflect the views and interests of current HOA members. This proposal will forcefully remove us from our homes with no affordable options to turn to. I will have nowhere to go. What Lincoln Properties is proposing is not affordable housing. It strips Dallas residents the opportunity to be homeowners and plans to uproot environmental portions of the Katy Trail that should be protected. As of now, I am a disabled individual with a job contributing to the Dallas local economy. I can provide for myself because of my current living arrangement. I ask that the council members who claim to champion the fight for affordable housing and care for the rights of people with disabilities to consider my situation, for I am not alone, and vote against this rezoning proposal. I thank you for your time today, and I look forward to voting in the election this Saturday.
Thank you. Margette Hefner.
Hi, Margette Hefner, Lincoln Property Company, 2000 McKinney Avenue. I am also a resident of downtown Dallas, have been a resident of uptown and downtown Dallas for almost 20 years. I, too, hold this neighborhood, our uptown neighborhood, very dear to my heart, which is one of the reasons that we're really excited about this project. So Lincoln Property Company is headquartered in uptown Dallas. We're a 55-year-old family-owned company, and this particular project is very important to us for a number of reasons. It's a long-term hold for Lincoln. And one of the goals of this project is to, we've heard our neighbors talk about Uptown, Turtle Creek, and the Katy Trail. And the Katy Trail is truly a gem and one of the gems of Dallas. And having the ability to develop a project that connects Uptown with the Katy Trail, with Turtle Creek, and the Oak Lawn community is something that we're truly excited to do. So over the course of the last several years, we've had hundreds of meetings with every stakeholder, with our neighbors, with our opposition. In February of 2018, we took what was then a project that was a single building, so one building that was the block from Carlisle from Katy Trail, Hall, and Bowen, with the fire lane backing up to the Katy Trail. Took that to the Oak Lawn Committee, and it was actually approved by the Oak Lawn Committee in 2018. By request of the P&Z, we went back and met with the neighborhood, spent more time with the neighborhood, specifically the opposition that lived right across the street. And P&Z asked us to meet with the neighborhood and talk a little bit more about what we might be able to change on the project for their liking. So in August of 2018, we sat down on page 5 of the handout that we shared. We sat down with the opposition. You'll see Popkin Development's logo on the bottom left corner, and you'll see that you'll see all the check marks and everything that the neighborhood, that the opposition asked us to do, we actually did, with the exception of, at that point, they were requesting an urban form setback on Hall and Bowen. We did not do that one yet, but specifically, they asked us to break our building in two. They provided us with the drawing that you'll see on the right-hand side. And you'll notice that that's exactly what we've done. So Lincoln Property Company took their drawing of the two buildings broken in two with the Paseo in the center, really, truly connecting Uptown with the Katy Trail and integrating the neighborhood with the community with the Katy Trail. We have gone back to the neighborhood and to the opposition over the course of this project, over the course of the last 7 to 8 months. We've had dozens of Zoom meetings with properties, with HOAs.
Your time is up. Thank you. Jeff Courtwright.
She called me.
Jeff Courtwright.
Thank you. This is Jeff Courtwright. I run the Southwest region for Lincoln Property Company. My address is 2000 McKinney. That's our corporate headquarters. I'm going to finish up a few of Margette's comments that she didn't get to, which effectively we took their design and redid it. So we eliminated a fire lane. We moved the trash and the storage inside the parking garage and enclosed it. We came up with a paseo. We lowered a full level of the building on the backside along the Katy Trail. We added walk-up units along the Katy Trail to screen the garage. We also did an urban setback above 15 feet of 10 feet and then another 10-foot setback in various areas of the building to create some articulations. Most recently, we've also done a pocket park on Carlisle and another setback on Hall. So all those things, including 6-foot sidewalks, bearing power lines, have all gone into changes that were requested by the neighborhood that were honored by Lincoln Property Company, literally every one of them. So I'd like to go ahead and then move to kind of giving you a virtual tour around our site and tell you what each property owner adjacent to us thinks about or what their position is in relation to our zoning request. If you go to our north property line, the property owner on the north is Carlisle on the Creek, and they are not opposed to our zoning. To the west property line is Oaklawn Park. They are also not opposed to our zoning. Turtle Creek Association most recently has given us a letter of support, which is new since our last submission. Also, we've gotten a great we've done a ton of work with Friends of the Katy Trail, and they've given us a letter of support and are speaking on our behalf today. To the southwest boundary is Hillwood that was mentioned earlier. Hillwood does not oppose our zoning request, and in fact, Ken Reese with Hillwood has said to me that the changes we made that relate to the trail he thinks are great, and we've done good work in listening to the community. The Monaco, which is on our south boundary, has actually given us a letter of support. Again, this is a new letter of support that we didn't have in our previous submission. The Taylor, the 17-story building to our southeast, they also do not oppose our zoning request. To our east boundary is the Vine, and as someone has pointed out early, the Vine is opposed. But if you go on the east side of the Vine, Sutton Place and Bois de Chien have both given us letters of support, and they are both MF2 zone three-story buildings. Real quickly, I want to mention a few other things. The heights and scale, our northern boundary is 5-story.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Suzanne Kedren.
Hi, good afternoon. Suzanne Kedren, 2323 Ross Avenue. I work and have lived in D14, currently live in District 2. If you would, please turn to page 8 of your handout. You will see that this project reconciles completely with the other PD193 MF2-based rezonings in the immediate vicinity. As a matter of fact, there are 5 other recent cases that sought much more height and lot coverage than we are requesting, and not one of them can boast as much mixed-income housing as we are proposing. Further, when you study PD193 as a whole, you will note that there are 160 sub-districts, some of which have been amended multiple times. That's exactly the intent of the Oaklawn Plan. It was intended to be a living, breathing guide for future development in PD193. The Oaklawn Plan was never intended to be static. It was intended to guide growth, which is precisely why there are 160 sub-districts and counting. In fact, when you dig deeper, the Phase 1 report that was adopted by consensus with the Oaklawn Plan designates this exact site as an unstable area. And in that same report, it further states that unstable areas should be redeveloped, and in some instances should even be redeveloped to create higher density zones. It is this exact guiding principle that is the basis of support for the previous 5 recent and much more intense rezonings in the immediate vicinity. It's unfortunate that some do not see change as a positive thing and necessary for our city. You've heard how the project has evolved. You've also heard that many support the project and how the community input has been incorporated into the design. Most notably, the project retains the MF2 base with a bonus for mixed income housing. The community enhancements include the two building configuration, the underground and wrapped garage, the internal building services, the pedestrian paseo, this pedestrian street scale created with additional setbacks on Carlisle and Hall, an additional pocket park along the southern part of Carlisle, the building articulation created by dropping the building by one story along Katy Trail and Bowen, the direct access to Katy Trail and street-facing liner units, the public paseo, as mentioned before, the commitment to the Friends of the Katy Trail to fund and construct two publicly accessible Katy Trail access points, and most notably, 8% mixed-income housing. The slide that best fits and shows how this is depicted in the character of the neighborhood is slide 9 in your handout. We seek your support of the staff recommendation of approval and approval of the CPC recommendation of approval. It's always been a good project, and it's now an even better project, thanks to the thoughtful and constructive community feedback received and incorporated into the design you have before you today.
Thank you. Charlie Schufeld. Charlie Schufeld. I'll come back. James Boots Reader.
Yes, am I? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Will you say your name, please? We can hear you.
Yes, my name is James Boots Reader. I live at 1925 Cedar Springs, Unit 302. I've lived in the uptown area for 25 years. I've watched the development grow, and it's done exceptionally well. We've created a very nice environment. I like living here. I'm enjoying it. Everyone I know here thinks we've done a good job. I think this project is very much in keeping with what the growth is. The height is fine. It's a good-looking project, and it fits well for where it's being put. I drive Carlisle literally every day, and I am absolutely supporting this, and I urge each councilman to support it. I think it's normal growth, and they've done an excellent job in dealing with the neighborhood and trying to adapt to what their requirements are, but I think they've created an excellent project. I urge you to support it. Thank you for your time.
Charlie Schufeld.
Hi, thank you all for letting me speak here today. My name is Charlie Schufeld. I'm speaking in my capacity as a board member of the Friends of the Katy Trail. I've served on that board for the past 7 years, most recently as president of the board. Who is the Friends of the Katy Trail? We are the organization that's partnered with the Parks Department of the City of Dallas to maintain and enhance the Katy Trail. Our organization raises approximately $1 million annually for operation and maintenance of the trail. In addition to that, we just recently completed an $8 million capital project to enhance the trail in 2020. Development along the trail has a huge impact on trail usage and the aesthetics. We've seen a lot of development up and down the Katy Trail over the last 10 years and the impact from this. I was pleased that Lincoln Property recognized this impact and has spent the last several years working with our organization on the design for their project and how it integrates with Katy Trail and our master plan. They've been very thoughtful in their dialogue and open to our feedback. We believe this project will enhance the trail. Suzanne mentioned the addition of entrances as well as integrating the landscaping with the Katy Trail and their consideration of how the design impacts things like light onto the trail. So it's for these reasons that the Friends of the Katy Trail supports this project. Thank you.
Thank you. John Beasley. Thank you. John Beasley.
Now.
We can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. I'm John Beasley, and I've resided at 3215 Carlisle, number 118 in uptown Dallas. I'm John Beasley. I've resided at 3215 Carlisle Street, number 118 in uptown Dallas, 75204, for the past 15 years. As a member of the board of directors of the Turtle Creek Homeowners Association, I represent the supermajority of property owners who support the Lincoln Katy Trail project. For over 5 years, my fellow owners at Turtle Creek Terrace have closely followed Lincoln's plans to redevelop the place we call home. The project has gone through many changes, and each change represents Lincoln's adaptation to the needs and wants of our neighbors all along the Katy Trail and in an ever-changing, vibrant uptown. We are pleased that Lincoln has included the mixed-income housing initiative in their plan. The reorientation of the complex toward the Katy Trail and Turtle Creek Park is an important enhancement to the neighborhood. The setbacks, landscape, and utility improvements, and a pedestrian paseo open to the public are all welcome refinements to their plan. Lincoln has met with the ownership multiple times to help us understand how these changes will enhance the neighborhood while at the same time respecting our neighbors, especially our neighbors across the street at the Vine. For the past 5 years, the lives and home investment of 100 owners at Turtle Creek Terrace have been held in suspense of what will happen with this project. So today, a supermajority of the homeowners at Turtle Creek Terrace asks the City Council to follow the City Plan Commission's recommendation and staff approval and approve Lincoln Katy Trail as presented. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you. Francisco Medrano.
Thank you.
Am I able to share my desktop with you as a presentation?
I'm sorry, you're not able to share that.
We're not able to? Okay, well, we'll just proceed with my comments then. My name is Francisco Medrano. I reside at 3203 Carlisle Street in Dallas. Mr. Mayor, I'm in favor of Lincoln's zoning case, Z190-359. I've been a board member for 10 of the 15 years I have lived at Turtle Creek Terrace and currently serve as president of our homeowners association. Our homeowners have seen this zoning case through 5 years and have twice voted overwhelmingly in support of the sale to Lincoln for redevelopment. Lincoln's presentation today is a new plan and not the same as the old plan originally presented. Lincoln has actively engaged with the community. Our homeowners attended some of the meetings hosted by Lincoln and at the Oak Lawn Committee. Lincoln even hosted meetings with our neighbors at our own clubhouse. As a result of the community's thoughtful input, Lincoln incorporated many changes to form their existing development plan we see today. The opposition may mistakenly hold onto some of the same beliefs from the previous plan. More than one traffic study by experts in their field concluded a less than second impact. And the Lincoln Katy Trail development does not create the perception of a so-called canyon effect, as the adjacent property immediately across the Katy Trail is gently sloping City of Dallas parkland. Buried power lines, improved walkability, public access to the Katy Trail, keeping trees worth saving and planting new trees are some of the improvements and benefits to what exists today. Not to mention the affordable housing component in Lincoln's plan can be looked to as a model for redevelopment in other areas around Dallas. The Lincoln Katy Trail project, as presented, is appropriately suitable in the uptown neighborhood. I am hopeful the council votes in support of Lincoln's zoning case. Thank you.
Thank you. Ken Sandstead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
My name is Ken Sandstead.
I'm a longtime resident of District 14. I live at the Mayfair, which is at 3401 Lee Parkway, 75219. That puts me a few hundred feet away from this development site. I'm also one of those who for years ran the Katy Trail. I've been watching this development proposed by Lincoln for 3 years. I've attended meetings where this project was presented and discussed. That is my background and standing to speak here. As a Turtle Creek homeowner and a longtime resident of District 14, I support the project. I could provide many reasons, but sensitive to the time, I will just highlight three. First, this development will basically redevelop a dated property and thus beautify the neighborhood. Second, I appreciate and like the changes Lincoln has made to improve the design and fit for something along the trail. As one of the previous speakers mentioned, I believe it has gone from a good to an excellent design. With those design changes, I believe it fits beautifully with the scale of the area, which was especially important to me. Third, I think the fact that the developer here is a proud Dallas firm, a firm with deep local roots, and a firm founded and grown not far away on Oaklawn Avenue is not unimportant. I believe Lincoln is a firm with a wonderful reputation around the country for doing high quality projects. Why is that particular idea important? Well, in my life experience, I know that most people are especially protective of their name and reputation close to home. This is true of people. This is true of businesses. I would close with this request. I urge Council Member Blewett and the council to show leadership and support this project. Thank you very much for hearing from an interested citizen. Thank you.
Thank you. Merrill Hartline. Merrill Hartline. Mayor Hartline is not present. Camille Habibi.
Afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, my name is Camille Habibi. I live on Lincoln property on 4719 Cole Avenue. My wife and I have had a retail business in Uptown area for the last 27 years, and we have seen the growth in Uptown area because of Lincoln and other properties that have brought us businesses, not just for us and everybody else. When we decided to downsize living in Highland Park last 27 years, we decided this location because it was perfect for location, amenities, service and management. And I think Lincoln is doing a perfect job on every property, especially this one. And we support them and we're looking forward to other businesses getting growth from Lincoln property coming to Uptown area. Thank you. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Ron Natinsky.
Yeah, good afternoon. Mr. Mayor, City Council members, City Manager, I'm Ron Natinsky. I live at 4719 Cole Avenue, just north of the proposed rezoning site. I do have some long-term ties to the Uptown area. When my wife and I got married, I have to say little over 50 years ago. We lived at Carlisle and Blackburn for quite a while. And then, either fortunately or unfortunately, we moved away. But then we got smart again and came back, and we now live on coal backing up to the Katy Trail. We love it. For us, it's our home. It is not a multifamily building. It's our home. My wife and I and our dog use a trail almost daily. I bike the trail. This community is important to us, and the future development of the community is important to us. I think looking at it from as an outsider, I believe that Lincoln has worked closely with the community, with the neighborhood, with the Katy Trail supporters to come up with a design that is not just plopping more multifamily along the trail. It's bifurcated the building into two unique buildings. It's blocking the views of the garage. It's got the Paseo entrances to the Katy Trail built in. To me, this is a huge amenity to the community, not just another multifamily building. When you add in the support that it's giving to the multi-income housing aspects of the building at the percentages that they've done, and then take everything into consideration, this is a good neighbor for the rest of us that live in the uptown area and call it home. I would urge the council to support this rezoning case and move it forward and add another good project to uptown. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Kirsten Hanna.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Similar to Mr. Natinsky, I'm in favor of this project. I do come at it from a little bit of a different perspective, however. We are new to Uptown. We lived in Austin for 19 years. Then we moved to Chapel Hill, North Carolina for a year, and then came back to Texas like most people do when they leave Texas. They come back to Texas. We chose Uptown because of the vibrancy, the community, the energy, and we absolutely love it. When I heard about this project and I did some research on it, I have to say I'm extremely excited about it. We live on Carlisle Street, just a little ways away from it, and just to have another access to the trail is wonderful for the community, and not only just an access to the trail, but the way it has been designed with the Paseo and just the beautiful architecture that's involved in this project. It just makes me very proud to live in this area, and I really hope that it is decided that this project can go through. Thank you.
Thank you. John Anderson is not present. Al Chapman is not present. Amanda Popkin.
Yes, hello. Thank you all for your service and your attention to this important case. I'm an urban planner and a community engagement specialist representing the Turtle Creek Neighborhood Association. The biggest critique from the consultants doing the city's economic development plan was that Dallas does not stick to its neighborhood plans, but allows piecemeal development. Even Austin has long-term development plans they stick to for decades to reach the desired build-out, attracting serious development and major employers because of the reliability of their plans and ordinances. By and large, PD 193 and Oak Lawn have developed as planned, with high-density office and commercial-zoned properties getting zoning changes to accommodate even more residential density. That's in the plan. Those are the recent zoning cases Ms. Kedren recently referenced. In return for providing ample opportunities for high-rise construction, stable low-density neighborhoods were provided the protection of MF2 zoning, not MF2.5 or MF3. Approval of this zoning request is a complete disregard for this established zoning plan here in the city's long-range master plan. The Oak Lawn plan defines the primary distinction between MF2 and higher residential zoning as a height of 36 feet. Full stop. Residential development over 36 feet in height is MF3, and it's required to provide setbacks when adjacent to lower density neighborhoods in MF2. This is why the Taylor Catty Corner from this site has a row of 36-foot high units along Bowen. The building setback is a full 50 feet before it reaches its maximum allowed height. That's required by PD 193. Higher density residential zoning requires the same. This project, as designed, is substantially inconsistent with the requirements in the surrounding area, with a lack of buffers or protections to reduce impacts on nearby low-density neighborhoods. The project is double the allowable height triple the allowed density and lot coverage, not to mention clear-cutting and tabletopping this site, drastically changing the unique character of the small neighborhood in Oaklawn. What little cool topography we have in Dallas and the few majestic trees we have in this neighborhood will soon be gone. Surrounding properties stand to lose a lot of their value with this project next door. Please reference the list of untrue and misleading statements made to CPC that I sent you all yesterday regarding some of the statements being made by the applicant's representatives today. This is not allowed and should not be given special exceptions. By approving this zoning case, you're allowing this parcel to be singled out for special treatment. Are we really telling the development community that if they just keep submitting poor designs without meeting neighborhoods' concerns, that they'll eventually gain approval from City Hall? This is the reason people eventually end up buying in the suburbs. We want families living in these more dense areas, living ecologically responsible lifestyles and walking and biking to work. And these residents need reliable city ordinances to make smart investment decisions. They need city leaders to stick to neighborhood plans so that our city develops the way we've all agreed that our city should grow. Thank you so much for your time on this.
Thank you. Richard Brown.
Yes, thank you. You can hear me?
Yes, we can
hear
you.
Thank
yes,
you very much. Honorable Mayor, members of the Council, my name is Richard Brown, 8 Castile Trail, Wiley, Texas, 75098. Now, I'm part of the team that represents the Turtle Creek Neighborhood Alliance in consideration of this item. I've listened to a lot of comments, and I'm kind of revising my thoughts to you, but I want to focus on two areas of this process from the perspective of career and land use planning, of which I am proud to have served as the Planning Department's Senior Land Use Planner for 25 years until my retirement in April of 2016. First of all, I want to talk about the process. As you know, it requires open, collaborative efforts of staff and applicant, the community, and in this case, the Oaklawn Committee, and there's already been comments made about the applicant not going to them with their current application. With respect to interaction with the applicant and their team, there have been some conversations, but our first productive meeting was 3 days before the City Plan Commission hearing, at which time we presented some concerns, but some ideas that may allow for support from the neighborhood. And we were told at that time it was a little late in the process to be making any changes. The second thing I want to talk about is the integrity of the process that provides everybody who's interested a packet of detailed information. And respectfully speaking, there are some disconnects and some lack of clarity in your council materials. The information I sent you last night does pick up some detail, but specifically some of the lack of information related to compliance with the Oaklawn Plan, the Turtle Creek Corridor Master Plan, as well as the objectives specifically as it relates to the lower density adjacency this project has. And speaking of the increase in height, normally staff will ask for a sun and shadow study to see the impact as the sun travels across properties from one area to the next, but there is no detail in the staff report, nor was there a requirement. In terms of the topography, yes, this site is a lovely piece of property, 32 feet of fall, and the applicant and Lincoln understand this. And so the renderings and elevations that they've shown infer that the topo will be protected in this development, yet there is no dialogue and detail in the staff report, nor are there any development standards that ensure that the site is not graded differently than it exists today. Landscaping and street trees and tree mitigation, that's been covered, and based on a 2018 survey that came from the AFSA application, all trees except the 41 caliber inch live oak at the corner of Hall and Carlisle will be
removed.
That's
your time.
Lastly,
your time has expired.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, this concludes your speakers on this item.
Madam Secretary, is there a motion?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, there is.
Mr. Blewett, you recognize?
Thank you, sir. I move to close the public hearing and approve the zoning change as recommended by the City Plan Commission.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion?
Sure.
Mr. Blewett, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
I would like to point out before I go into my true comments, I was just notified that John Anderson had been on to make comments, and he's a voice that I respect very much. I don't know how he got moved off, but I would have liked to have heard from him. So just for the public's edification, I very much wanted to hear from Mr. Anderson.
Well, let me pause your time and ask you this. Is he on the line?
I just texted him. He said he's not, but okay. If we could find him, I would love him on.
It would require two-thirds to suspend the rules to do, and I would do it with consent if he was on the line.
He's just texting. He just texted saying he's not on, so.
Okay, then go ahead. You have 4 minutes, 20 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, sir. Throughout this process, there has been significant community outreach. I've participated in 2 town hall debates, including Oaklawn Committee members and a significant number of neighborhood stakeholders and even my campaign rivals. I've discussed this project with neighbors, with our D14 plan commissioner, Mr. Wayne Garcia, and I've discussed the history and our options with many of those who signed up to speak today. I believe this project needs to be approved for the following reasons. 1, the developer. Lincoln Property Company is a longtime developer in Dallas and has a multi-decade track record of building high-quality properties. And in today's environment, with funding difficulties, we know they have their funding in place, so there won't be a concern of actually completing the project. 2, not precedent setting. It's been noted today that there have already been several MF2 upzones in PD 193, some of which are larger and without mixed income housing, that have been approved by this body. Projects needed to the south, like the Monaco, are of comparable size, and some are significantly larger. 3, the condition of the current property. I've walked this property. I've spoken with the homeowners and the residents about the building itself. The HOA has significant deferred maintenance, including needing a new roof, exterior rot, and general maintenance needs. Some of these residents are very concerned about an assessment to be able to have to pay for some of those things. Most of the residents I spoke with do not have the resources to make the needed repairs. A new developer with the resources and a plan to accomplish these fixes is necessary for the long-term vitality of the area. New public amenities. The east side of the Katy Trail lacks access points. To cross under the bridge at Bowen Street to get to the west access points is dangerous, as you must use a narrow sidewalk without any kind of a buffer from traffic. Currently, there's a fence all around the property with no public access to the Katy. This project provides 2 new publicly accessible entry points to the Katy. They are burying the utilities, adding 6-foot-wide sidewalks with additional parkway space for pedestrian safety. Preservation. Lincoln is committed to including replacement of foliage and green space in their plan to supplant what must be removed. This was an important element to the community and one that I try to include in developments throughout District 14, especially those near an area known for green space like the Katy Trail. Stakeholder involvement. The Oaklawn Committee and other interested parties have had multiple opportunities to help improve this project, and they have. It is significantly better than when it was first proposed. They divided the building into 2 separate buildings with the 75-foot publicly accessible, what they call a paseo, eliminating the fire lanes along the back, and then we've talked about the 8% in mixed-income housing. They moved the loading access inside the building, lowered the height, reduced the unit count, provided additional setbacks and a pocket park along Carlisle. These are things that the community asked for and got, and I applaud them for their efforts. Community input is vital to ensuring proposed projects such as the Lincoln Katy are an improvement to the neighborhood. And I appreciate the lengthy process that we've gone through to get this project to council in its current form and be beneficial to the community in the long term. The project is a good fit for the needs of the area. The benefits to aesthetics and area beautification, as well as increased pedestrian safety, present an important opportunity to improve one of Dallas's premier locations alongside the Katy Trail. Please join me in approving this project.
Anyone else wish to speak on for or against item Z1?
Kleinman.
Mr. Kleinman, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Councilmember Blewett, for bringing this case forward. I remember when this case was in front of the council previously. A couple of other interesting comments on this case. One is that originally when it was brought in front of the council, it required a 3/4 vote because of the level of opposition, and now I believe it's just a majority vote, indicating that the developer has done their hard work in order to help the neighborhood come to grips with this project. Certainly change is tends to bring people out, but I think this is net change for the better. The Paseo is incredible amenity far beyond this project. I mean, it's really for the whole neighborhood to give them access to the trail and good access to the trail. The setbacks also fall in line with our public policy of more walkability. The obviously we have the public policy for affordable housing, which they are addressing in this, and not to be minimized, but the ability for the residents at the current development to monetize the value of their property. And I think that's an important thing to consider. And it's my understanding the majority of the residents there do want to see this project go forward so that they can literally extract the value out of their properties. So, Mr. Blewett, I commend you for your efforts and your patience and your willingness to work with the neighborhood and find that balance point. And I think that we're there, and I will continue to support this project. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's all.
Thank you. Anyone else wishes to go on for or against item Z1?
West.
Mr. West, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a very difficult case for me, and I suspect it's been for my colleague, Mr. Blewett, as well. I'm appreciative of the work that Mr. Blewett has put into this case over the last few months and the years of work that have been put into this from staff, plan commissioners, multiple council members, and very passionate stakeholders and neighbors. I have to say a special note of thanks to the Oaklawn Committee for their tireless work on this project and others in seeking compromises between builders and neighbors. Your work is appreciated, as always, and it's very much needed in our complicated PDs like 193. This case has been going on for years, as many people have mentioned, and it actually came to the Planning Commission when I was on it back in 2018. Back in 2018, I was critical of this plan for a lot of reasons. For not having pedestrian entrances off any of the streets. You had to walk into the garage to get upstairs, and not having direct access to the Katy Trail from the building itself. I was pleased to see that those issues seem to have been addressed. I mean it when I say that this case was difficult for me, but to me it turns on two things. The appropriateness of density here and the preservation of needed affordability. Let's talk about density first. Density definitely does make sense in our downtown and our urban corridors, especially when it's next to transit, jobs, and next to amenities like our amazing Katy Trail. But there are also reasons for preserving areas with smaller footprints, as Mr. Page mentioned, even within our densest parts of the city, where urban dwellers can get away from the hustle and bustle of the city and have a place to escape that. If we approve this case, the loss of that small footprint of this area is something that we'll never get back, and it's something that we certainly have to weigh. On the flip side, some speakers mentioned that this project, if approved, will result in a net loss of affordable for-sale homes in an area that is rapidly increasing in price. The rapid loss of affordable for-sale homes is a major problem in the city right now. We have people moving into Dallas because of our good economy and our opportunities, and there's simply not enough homes to keep up with that growth. It doesn't help that our permit office continues to lag behind every other city in the state, hurting our city's ability to produce more homes, along with slowing down our property tax revenue and hurting jobs in the construction industry. I'm going to once again take this opportunity to implore the city manager to put every top executive in the city to fix this problem in the permit office. If a denial of this case would allow for preservation of affordability of these homes, I would probably support that denial. But denying this case is not going to stop the affordability from going away. The zoning on this site allows for multifamily, it allows for townhomes. And simply put, with prices in Uptown, if this project is not approved, we're going to get something that's market rate. It's going to be high-priced luxury townhomes. It's going to be market rate, very expensive multifamily homes. And PD 193 doesn't allow for us to take advantage of the city's mixed income housing bonus. So we're stuck with whatever market rate allows. In summary, if we deny this case today, the alternative is almost surely going to be market rate with zero affordability. But approving the case will at least allow for some affordability to be preserved into the future. When I weigh these two issues, the increased density in an area that it would be nice to kind of preserve a little bit less density, versus our need for preservation of affordability, the affordability wins out for me. It supports our housing goals as part of the comprehensive housing policy, along with a lot of other amenities for our urban dwellers. So with that being said, I will support the motion. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to speak on for or against item Z1? Hearing none.
You.
Sorry, who was that?
McGue.
And Narvaez.
Okay. McGue, then Narvaez. Okay. Mr. McGue, you're recognized for 5 minutes, then Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I really just want to say thank you to my colleague, Councilmember Blewett. I've heard the struggle in some of this. There's good people and people that I respect on both sides of this issue, and it's an important issue. It's been discussed. But I really appreciate the way you've handled this as it relates to getting out in the community, talking to the folks that live in and around this area and are engaged and have been engaged in this for a very long time. I also want to compliment the developer, as they have, it's evident in the proposals and the progress we've seen in the plans, that they did listen to the community. It's you know, we're not at perfect, but we've done I think a good job at making some really impactful improvements, as have already been mentioned by a number of folks. And so I will be able to support this project. Congratulations on getting this to this point, and hope it's a good project. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Narvaez, you were recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do want to first start off by saying, Mr. Blewett, thank you. I know you've worked very hard to get through this. And zoning issues, especially when they become this impactful to a neighborhood, are always difficult. And every single one of us has been through it, and none of us enjoys it, but that's part of our job, is trying to navigate and come up with the best decision possible. I do respect your motion. Unfortunately, I won't be able to support it for these reasons. One, the environmental impact. Losing that many trees is going to be really hard on the environment, especially with what's happened with the tornado. We just can't afford to lose this many trees in one swoop, is something that I feel. And then number two is the affordable housing is only at 8%, and the affordable housing was not at the 51 to 60 or 61 to 80% of area median income, so that there's no workforce housing in here. It's only 8% at the 81 to 90%. And from what I remember, a lot of colleagues did talk about having 10% affordability in a housing development as we move forward. And so for those reasons, it's too short, comes up too short for me. And so I'll have to be in opposition at this time. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else wishing to speak on, for, or against item Z1?
Mr. Atkins, I will do that.
Mr. Atkins, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
You know, I think that as a newcomer with Vice Chairman Blewett of Economic Development, and trying to look at the aspect of how we try to do development in the part of the city of Dallas, I think that Blewett, you kind of balanced everything completely. I think you did your due diligence. I think everyone have a great outlook to protect neighborhoods, and that's something we need to do, protect the neighborhood. We also need to make sure we got affordable houses. I want to bring up, I guess Dr. Johnson is on the line. Is he there?
Councilman Atkins?
Yes, Dr. Johnson, this project, through economic development and housing, and since you do cover both housing and economic development, could you just tell your view and your thoughts about this project?
Sorry, Councilmember, thank you. Well, my thoughts really are sort of, I think everyone knows we're facing a housing challenge in Dallas across the board. I would say that the more affordability we can achieve, the better. I'm just going to kind of say that I don't want to comment too much on the project specifically, but I just think in general, how we deal with issues of balancing affordability and creating market rate housing is going to be something we're going to have to deal with. That's all I really want to say on that.
Thank you very much. I just want to make sure that Blewett, that you've been working Blewett, and it's in your district. You should know what's going on in your district. We rely on the council member to know their district better than we know know the district. I'm relying on you, Blewett. I'm going to support your project. I think that you have worked tirelessly. You have balanced the act. I think you did everything to bring everybody to the table. I see former Council Ron Detensky, who was over the term of economic development, that is there also spoken in favor of this project. With that, Blewett, I think that you're doing a marvelous job. I will be supporting you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Basil Dua, you're running us for 5 minutes. And Ms. Mendelson, are you trying to get into?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Basil Dua, then Ms. Mendelson. Anyone else that missed?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead. You're right for 5 minutes. Go ahead.
I just want to ask if staff could answer a question about the reason behind the difference in offering of the income ban for affordability at CPC level from the applicant than what was originally recommended by staff per our MVA.
Correct. Councilmember Basil Dua, Pam Thompson with Housing is in the attendees. If she can be made a panelist, I think she could answer that question. If not, then I will attempt to, but I think Pam would be a better person.
Thank you.
What's the name again? We're trying to see if we can get them connected.
Pam Thompson.
Pam Thompson.
She was there earlier. She's not there now. So.
Okay, not connected at the moment. Was before. Should we look into that, or are you going to take a stab at it?
So, members, this is Pam Thompson. I'm here.
Oh, yes. Good. There we go.
So, unfortunately, one of the things that's difficult about these deals is making them financially viable. So staff has been consistent in requesting for 51 to 60% AMI. And in this case, the CPC was interested in getting more units at a higher income level so that we would have more units. It's important to understand that this, this project will be required to accept voucher holders. And so this additional number of units at a slightly higher income band plus voucher holders was, in staff's mind, essentially an even trade, 5% at 51 to 60 or 8% at 81 to 100, ensuring additional units for voucher holders. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. Can you tell us what the difference in the income level as far as numbers are of 51 to 60% annual salary versus that of 81 to 100.
I can't. Give me just a second to pull it up. I think some of my colleagues have this thing posted on their walls, and I do not. But just 1 second. Okay, so I have the 2020 income level, so that's a little bit out of date. So 100% of the area median income for the HUD metro area, that's for Dallas, that's essentially the Dallas side of the Metroplex, is $86,000 for a family of four. At 80% for a family of four, that's $68,950. And then for 50% for a family of four, that's $43,100.
Okay. So we're talking about almost half of the income. You know, I was really honestly disappointed to see the applicant offer a higher income ban as their affordability option. This is honestly, in my opinion, a lot of why we have a lot of work to do when it comes to affordable housing in our city. We can make policy. And we can have a policy on a piece of paper, and we can either adhere to it or not. If we choose not to and allow for the developers to dictate what affordable housing looks like in our city, then we will continue down the same path that we're in. And I don't think that that helps any of the working class income band move into this neighborhood. I don't think that it helps us with that affordable housing challenge unless you really want to say that close to six figures is affordable housing of an annual income. And we are I know that this is was a tough case, and I know that there's a lot of history in the case, and I know that there's definitely, in my inbox alone, a lot of opinions of both in favor and in opposition. So I can only imagine what my colleague, Mr. Blewett, has experienced with it being in his district. However, I don't believe that this goes along with what we have said our commitment to the affordable housing policy would be in holding the developers accountable to what our expectations are. And I do not believe that going up to 8% from 5% just by moving that ban will suffice. That doesn't help an entire population that we were trying to target. So for that reason, I will not support this motion, but I do want to commend my colleague for all of the work that I know he's put into it. I hope that we can get to a point with all of us in all of our districts that we can have consistent standard across the board on where we hold developers to an expectation when it comes to affordable housing in our city. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Mendelson, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
I just want to say to Councilmember Blewett how much I appreciate your thoughtful approach to this. I know you've done your homework, and I know it's been really difficult. We don't just need affordable housing. We need all kinds of housing in this city. And this item, you know, it could have been deferred, and I actually thought you probably should have done that. But really, you had the courage to move it forward. And that really shows leadership. I know I asked you a lot of questions offline about this, and you had great answers for all of them. And I just want you to know how much I appreciate you having done all your homework and worked with the community, walked it yourself, looked at all the different angles, and then, like I said, had the courage to bring it forward. And I'll be supporting you on this. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak on for or against item Z1? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. Oh.
The ayes have it, Madam Secretary. Next item.
MC3 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to Plan Development District Number 539 for CR Community Retail District uses to allow MU-1 mixed-use district uses on the southeast corner of Graham Avenue and Phillip Avenue, with consideration given to a specific use permit for group residential use in addition to the plan development amendment.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 93 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 7 replies in favor and 1 in opposition.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Is there a motion? Item Z3. Maybe Mr. Medrano? Maybe someone else? Item Z3.
I'm here.
Yeah, there you are.
To approve this with the CPC recommendations.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Mr. Medrano, any discussion from
you? No discussion. Thank you, Mayor.
Anyone else? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. Next item.
Item Z4 is a public hearing and an ordinance granting an amendment to Plan Development District Number 369, generally southwest of South 2nd Avenue and southeast of the Southern Pacific Railroad right-of-way.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 24 notices to property owners within 500 feet of the area of request. We received 2 replies in favor and none in opposition.
There are 2 individuals that have signed up to speak on this item. Your first speaker is Jonathan Vincent.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and council members. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, I appreciate your time today. This is PD 369, which was established in 1992. I'm here representing at 2323 Ross Avenue is my address, here representing Atomic Truck Parking, which has been there for at least about 20 years. I'll talk a little bit more about their facility in a second, but Mr. Jackie Tucker, who's their on-site general manager, is here with me, and he's available for questions. This use has been in operation for a long time. It basically provides secured, highly secured parking for 18-wheelers and trailers, and these cargoes can be worth billions of dollars, electronics, pharmaceuticals, things like that. You know what a terrific logistics hub Dallas is. This is a much-needed facility because these trucks cannot just go park anywhere, and if they do, I sent you an article about trailer security. They are actually exposed to theft and hijacking, things like this. This is 24/7 on-site manned security cameras, things like that. It's a vital part of our logistics infrastructure. This came up when a code inspector was out there looking at another use on 2nd Avenue. This use is not even visible from 2nd Avenue, but he looked at everything kind of back behind it, determined that this should be a commercial motor vehicle parking use, which we think was added to the code since the PD was adopted. This facility has been here for quite a while. There has been no opposition whatsoever. Plan Commission and staff both recommend approval. We are supporting the Plan Commission recommendation, and I provided you with a handout adding this use by right, commercial motor vehicle parking, not requiring a development plan for this specific use since it's been there for about 20 years. It really serves no purpose. There is a conceptual plan for the allow continuation of the all-weather crushed rock parking service. This is, you know, multiple acres. The paving would be not only hugely expensive, but more importantly, from a global standpoint, create a lot of runoff into the surrounding floodplain and creek beds. And last, not require additional screening because it is screened on every side. You can't even see this from outside the perimeter of the site. You can't see it from 2nd Avenue. It's in the floodplain. To even develop it for anything other than this use would be hugely expensive and very complicated from an engineering standpoint. So, again, no opposition from anyone. We had a community meeting in January, a virtual meeting. We respectfully ask you to approve it on the basis of the Plan Commission recommendation as reflected in the draft ordinance. And we think this is a very important use for the city, and we hope you will approve it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jackie Tucker.
Jackie, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, I don't have anything. I'm just sitting in for questions, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Mr. Mayor, this concludes your speakers on this item.
Very much. Is there a motion? Item Z4.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to deny the zoning change with prejudice.
Is there a second?
And
did you hear anything? Okay, so we have a second. Any discussion?
Yes, sir, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I delayed this case originally, spoke with several stakeholders to include DPD, the task force that is taking on the area plan of PD 595, which is adjacent to it. And in addition to that, also with city staff regarding some concern of environmental issues that were validated from staff, that with its proximity to the floodplain and its proximity to nearby residential, there is definitely a concern that I believe needs to be addressed when it comes to idle trucks, when it comes to the amount of trucks that are coming through on 2nd Avenue.
And the environmental impact that we are allowing through zoning to take place in such close proximity to residential communities is something that we need to be cognizant of making proactive measure to change. And this is one of those. In addition to that, as I mentioned, DPD being one of the stakeholders that I met with, we did a ride-along during the day, actually, to kind of not only for it, just in the district as a whole, but we did several cruises around that facility just to kind of see. And not necessarily at this facility, this isn't a blame to any to the applicant, but there's definitely some questionable if, and nefarious activities that occur from the 18-wheelers that already are parked and idle both at a very close by parking lot around the corner and then just right off of this property as a whole. There's a lot of drug activity and things that we think that this would be a contributing factor to. And that was feedback that I received from our partners in law enforcement. So I haven't really been convinced that there's much to attribute this to being a positive change for the community, especially with the area plan coming forward and knowing that there is a hope with the residents in the immediate area to see more vibrant retail and better zoning so that we can address many years of impediment on their air quality and overall quality of life that doesn't exist in other parts of our city. So I hope that I can count on my colleagues' support and that we will deny this this application. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Anyone else? On
Mayor.
Or against Z4, Mr. Narvaez, you are recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On this one, definitely I'm going to stand with Councilmember Basil Dua for the environmental impact. There is a, you know, we talk a lot about environmental justice, and with the CCAP being planned, we should not continue to put these types of businesses that are going to continue polluting the air next to neighborhoods. As you all know, we've been dealing with in West Dallas for decades, and it's time that we get this fixed, and we stand by what we passed when we passed the CCAP, that we're going to work in order to help our neighbors and our communities that have been impacted in this way due to systemic racism for the past many, many, many decades. And so I'm going to stand with Mr. Basil Dua and support him in his motion to deny this one with prejudice. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else wishing to speak on for or against item Z4? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The ayes have it. Next item.
Item PH1. PH1 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding the application for and approval of the fill permit and removal of the floodplain prefix on approximately 9.40 acres of the current 39.05 acres of land located at 2118 California Crossing Road within the floodplain of Elm Fork, fill permit 19-04. There are no speakers for this item, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Is there a motion? Item P.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir. You are recognized for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to close the public hearing at this time.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye. I'm sorry. Aye. I'm sorry. Do we need any discussion on the closing of the hearing? I always forget how these public hearings have to be closed. Any discussion on that? Just All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing's closed.
Item PH2 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding the application for and approval of the field permit and removal of the floodplain prefix from approximately 0.12 acres of the current 0.6 acres of floodplain located at 8902 Guernsey Lane. There are no speakers for this item, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
For approval and closing the public hearing.
And is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Madam Secretary.
And Mr. Mayor, there are no. For PH1, was that a motion to approve? Or we just to close the public hearing?
I think she said both. I thought I heard her say to approve and close.
Wasn't that necessary? Is it necessary to, for approval? Or just to close?
Are we discussing PH1 or PH2?
PH1.
If it's a public hearing, we just close the public hearing.
The city secretary was speaking, and I'll let the city attorney who's sitting in Tammy's seat speak if they disagree. But go ahead,
Secretary. If it's just a public hearing, you just make a motion to close the public hearing.
Yeah, but this is a bill permit application, so just clarity on PH1, was it to close the public hearing and approve the bill permit?
You're asking about PH1?
PH1, correct.
Would you restate your motion, Mr. Narvaez, so we can make sure we heard it correctly, so it'll be reflected correctly in the record?
Sure. I don't know if we're going to have to reconsider this and then do it over again, because I think I did just say to close the public hearing, but I should have said close the public hearing and move approval.
Okay. So I guess we'll need a motion to reconsider that. Someone who was on the prevailing side would be anyone.
A motion to reconsider.
A second. This is for PH1.
Yes. Any objection? Here's none. We're back on PH1. Mr. Narvaez, you're recognized for a motion on PH1.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to close the public hearing and move approval at the same time.
Is there a second?
Second.
On the safe side, I'm going to ask for discussion, but I don't think there was any.
I'll give a real quick discussion, Mr. Mayor, if that's okay. Sure. Colleagues, this is part of environmental justice. We are making sure that this happens so that a cement batch plant that has actually been out of compliance with their SUP and their certificate of occupancy for 18 months in District 6 can get their fill permit so they can start their construction and move into the industrial area of Northwest Dallas where they actually belong. So hope y'all will approve this again unanimously like you did before. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right, anyone else wish to speak on for against PH1? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. And we'll go on to PH2.
Mr. Mayor, we had a motion and a second on PH2.
Any further discussion on PH2? And that one was moved and for approval as well, right? Okay, good. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it, Madam Secretary.
Mr. Mayor, there are no further items for this agenda.
Wonderful. The time then is 2:55 p.m., and this meeting of the Dallas City Council is adjourned. Thank you very much, members.